Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
Thanks for joining us on Morning Edition. I'm Angela King. As vaccination efforts continue in our state, more and more people are looking at the possibility of returning to their old office buildings. For some, it's an exciting prospect. For others, an anxiety-inducing thought. KUOW's Kate Walters is here to walk us through what the return to offices might look like in terms of safety, mental health, and business trends. Hey, Kate, good morning.
Good morning.
Tell us what we're hearing in terms of employers calling their workers back to the office.
Yeah, so it really depends on where folks work in terms of what's going to happen for them, whether they're coming back to an office or staying at home or doing a mixture of both. I talked to John Scholes, who's the head of the Downtown Seattle Association, and he says a lot of businesses are going to switch to this hybrid model. So current guidelines are allowing 50% of building capacity. We saw Microsoft last month say, you know, workers have the option to come back to the office. Amazon has said that they're expecting most employees back in offices by early fall. And so, you know, what we're looking at there is bringing people back into spaces where things are going to be physically just a little bit different. You know, there's going to have to be a little more space than there was before. You're going to have to follow different guidelines. So things are going to physically look a little different, I think, in a lot of places. Depending on state guidelines and sort of what's happening at the time, John Scholes with the Downtown Seattle Association said he expects to see a couple of waves of folks coming back to businesses. So, you know, possibly one in July and then again one in September.
We sure hope that by the fall, we've got a majority of employees back. They might not be back 5 days a week, 40 hours a week, but we think the office is really going to continue to play a central role because people want to be in a dynamic urban environment.
And, you know, just one thing to note is they did a survey and 20% of the businesses that they survey don't expect to ever reach the level of people in their workspaces that they had pre-pandemic. So things might look a little different.
Okay. So what are companies saying when it comes to wanting people actually back in the physical spaces? This is about, you know, they're still paying light bills and rent on certain buildings. So they kind of want to justify that expense by bringing people back to the office. I mean, what are you hearing?
Right, holding real estate in Seattle, so we might as well have bodies in there. No, listen, what I'm hearing is that this is more about kind of the way that people work. So Michael Johnson is an associate professor of organizational behavior. He's with the UW Foster School of Business. And here's what he told me about this.
So a lot of companies, you know, talk about creative collisions where people will run into each other casually and that this will allow them to create more. And that's probably one of the reasons why they want to have people back in the office.
So that idea of, you know, you run into someone at the water cooler and you start chatting and some amazing idea comes out of it. But Johnson also told me that it might not be that easy as just bringing people back into that physical space, because some research that he's done with companies both in the US and in China, where they're a little ahead of us in the recovery, are showing that people have really changed how they communicate over the past year. They're tending to communicate less across departments and more just with people in their own teams.
And in China, what we found is that when people went back to the workplace, they continued those communication patterns. So that siloing did not automatically go back to the way they were before, but rather they stayed siloed.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Well, let's get back to the topic at large. You know, some people are looking forward to shifting back to the office. Others are literally dreading it.
Yeah. So Jane Simone, this clinical psychologist I spoke to, I asked her what advice she would give to folks. And here's what she had to say.
I would try to encourage folks not to think too much. Everything's going to be much worse, or it's all going to be much better, because obviously the reality is going to be somewhere in between. So some people are, for example, already saying, oh, my God, I'm dreading the commute again. And I have to buy all new clothes. And I am just not going to be as productive now at work. And they're just kind of focused on the negative aspects or the potentially really difficult aspects of going back. And then some people, on the other hand, are wildly optimistic about it.
She also mentioned if you can start slowly and sort of ease in back into a physical environment, that might help some folks.
Well, she had me at returning to traffic jams.
You and many others, I think, Angela.
Well, what about safety? People still worried. The virus is still spreading. We're still seeing spikes in King County throughout Western Washington.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a big part of this. I spoke with a professor who focuses on occupational health, and she says there are a couple of really key things that need to happen. Ventilation is a key piece with bringing people back safely. So if you can't open windows, mechanical ventilation really needs to be optimized. Masking and distancing are still going to be really important. And also keeping an eye on what's happening in the community, because workers aren't siloed, right? You know, you might have to take the bus to go into work. You have to go to the grocery store. You've got families or roommates. So that community transmission is still going to be something that needs to be taken into account.
Well, Kate, we've heard discussions about vaccine passports, you know, needing to be vaccinated before you can travel to another country, get on planes, or just travel around. What about vaccination requirements in the workplace? What are you hearing about that?
Yeah, so I haven't spoken with anyone specifically about vaccine passports for the workplace, but what I'm hearing is that there's still sort of some uncertainty in terms of whether or not employers are going to require vaccination to come back into offices. You know, one example I can give you of an employer is the city of Seattle. Last I spoke with them, they told me they are not planning to require vaccination for folks to come back. When I was speaking with John Scholes of the Downtown Seattle Association, again, we weren't talking specifically about vaccine passports, but one thing that he mentioned is a real benefit in the Seattle area is that there is high demand and high uptake when it comes to the COVID-19 vaccine. And so if that's a big part of people being safe in a workplace, it's going to look really different here than it might in maybe a different part of the state or a different part of the country where people are less likely to get vaccinated, and therefore it's going to be an environment where you have fewer workers in a workplace, and maybe that becomes something that then has to be a question of company policy. You know, what do we do with this? You know, the other thing that's important to acknowledge here with this conversation is that while some people were working from home during this pandemic, including myself, a lot of people were not able to do that. They didn't have a job that allowed them to be safe in their homes. So any discussion about returning to the workplace sort of holds a certain amount of privilege. Also, it's just important to note those safety measures that we know we need to take now come from the many iterations that were tried in other workplaces where folks have been sort of continuously throughout this past year.
KUOW's Kate Walters, thanks so much for this conversation.
You're welcome.
During the pandemic, a new divide has emerged between those who have to show up to work and those who can log in to Zoom. Now, companies are looking ahead to life after the pandemic. And as NPR's Camila Domonoske reports, this split may be here to stay.
Before the pandemic, nearly all American workers commuted by luxury car or jalopy, by bicycle or bus, to a factory or an office or a studio. The vast majority of us had to physically show up for work. Then came the pandemic.
So in 24 hours, we went from less than 1,000 employees working remotely to around 80,000.
Kirsten Robinson is the chief people officer at Ford Motor Company. And it turns out a lot of the work of making cars, like designing, engineering, and marketing, can be done from home.
So how quickly we were able to pivot and adjust to remote work really surprised me. I would never have anticipated that.
Of course, one place where it's impossible to make that pivot is a factory floor.
Cars have got to be built. You got to do that in person.
Marcy Pedraza is an electrician at a Ford plant in Chicago. And last month, when Ford announced it would make remote work a permanent option, she had one reaction.
I remember reading about that. And I thought, oh, it must be nice for them.
Pedraza says that actually some of her work could be done remotely. She handles a lot of paperwork. And as a single parent, she'd love that flexibility. She's always juggling childcare. But her boss said hourly workers weren't eligible.
So we don't have those same, I guess, the same luxuries as a salary do.
Not everyone loves working from home, but having the option really is a luxury, and it can be life-transforming. Henry Ford famously transformed factories with his moving assembly line, and the rise of the automobile reshaped American cities and our commutes. Now Ford and rival GM are leaning into this new remote work revolution. But unlike, say, tech companies, they have a huge pool of workers who have to show up in person. Robinson, Ford Ford's head of HR, says the company is trying to think of what they can offer so the work experience is improved for all employees. Maybe new on-site amenities?
And when you finish your shift, what if, rather than having to do a stop at the grocery store to pick up food for your family, we had food available that you could pre-order a meal to take home to your family?
Brett Fox is with the United Auto Workers Union. He has some ideas for everyday improvements at plants.
The air conditioning would help out a lot.
Factory floors get hot in the summer. In general, he says this could be an opening to negotiate over benefits that auto companies have balked at before, ways to make plant work safer or just better.
I definitely see that being the opportunity for us, you know, going to the companies and saying, hey, you're allowing your salary groups to work from home. Obviously, our members cannot work from home, so we need to do everything we can.
Of course, huge differences between office work and factory work are nothing new. The divide is as old as offices and factories, but it was amplified by the pandemic, and not just at auto plants.
Retail workers, hospitality workers, basically frontline workers, those who are traditionally more vulnerable have really suffered the most.
Zara Engelizian is the head of consumer industries at the World Economic Forum, and she says there are ways to address this inequity, from making workplaces safer to giving workers more chances for career growth. And she points out there are jobs we all assume have to be done in person where that won't always be the case.
At some point, maybe there's the train operator can run the train from their home. I don't know. maybe that's possible, but I think it will take some time.
Companies clearly underestimated how many jobs could be done from home. And Galizian argues they're still underestimating how many workers could benefit from more flexible working conditions. Camila Domonoske, NPR News.
Jose Lopez has spent most of his career behind a bar, serving drinks to customers from all over the country.
Being a bartender is the greatest thing if you like what you do. And you put so much into it, it is the best job out there.
He worked at Main Street Station, a casino on the Las Vegas Strip, for 23 years.
Main Street Station is one of those casinos who everybody is so warm with the customers. And it's like a family in there. Everybody knows everybody. And when we see a customer we haven't seen it before, we're trying to know him. And those people come back again. The Hawaiians are the primary customers that we have on Main Street, that we used to have on Main Street. And not only the Hawaiians, because when you create that connection with the customer, they come from all over the country, to be honest, from Boston, from Massachusetts, from Michigan, from Ohio. So that's one of the things that I love the most. I'm missing right now.
Casinos, hotels, and restaurants shut down in Las Vegas in March last year as much of the country went under stay-at-home orders. No tourists, no business, and a few months later, Jose Lopez was laid off.
Oh my God, at the beginning of the pandemic, you don't sleep much because you're not used to this and you don't know what's going to happen. And it drains you every day. You hear a text like, and the noise of the phone, and you wait, you're hoping that the company was calling you. And I used to plan my vacations every 6 months or a year and go someplace else. This is not the case now. We just get this little money from the unemployment, pay the bills, try to squeeze every dollar you have, and go on with your life every day.
Some casinos have reopened with limited capacity, but Main Street Station is still closed. It's not clear when it may reopen. Jose Lopez continues to wait. He's gotten some help from the Culinary Union, which has provided some meals. Nearly half of their workers, who are mostly Latino and immigrants, are in a similar situation, without work, anxious and hurting. Jose Lopez has been looking for another bartending job, but he's 59. He wouldn't have seniority at a new place.
It would take me years to come back and have the quality of shift that I had before. I mean, I don't know anybody who will just jump out and go start anyplace else. I feel like I haven't done anything wrong to lose my job. It was a pandemic who come in. And I'm going to go now and leave my job there for somebody else. When you go to someplace else, it's so hard to start. They put you on the bottom of the list, and, and it takes you 10, 15, 30 years to become, get a good spot in Florida.
Nevada's workforce has lost more income than any other state. Unemployment rates there have been some of the highest in the country. One piece of legislation gives Nevada workers some hope. It's called the Right to Return Bill and would require employers to offer laid off workers their same jobs or a position similar to what they were doing before the pandemic struck. But that bill hasn't been scheduled for a vote. Meanwhile, Jose Lopez says he's ready to get behind the bar again as soon as possible and see his customers.
I got vaccinated. I don't have a problem with a mask anymore. I think we've been through this for a year. People know how to deal with this. I would go to work tomorrow if I had to. I hope to be back in Main Street because that's where I belong.
Jose Lopez of Las Vegas.
The stories about Wall Street's work-till-you-drop culture are infamous. There's the hours. Young bankers at Goldman Sachs recently complained of abuse, citing the fact that they're expected to work up to 120 hours a week. Then there's the project manager, whose first thought during a heart attack was, "How inconvenient. I have a meeting with my manager." He wrote a LinkedIn post that went viral. Well, some are now rethinking this culture and all the punishing expectations that come with it. NPR's David Gura has more.
Right out of college, Anita Ramaswamy started a dream job at a big bank on Wall Street. Competition for an entry-level position is fierce because of the astronomical pay and prestige.
You know, they really entice you with a lot of perks as an intern. I remember getting, like, front row tickets to a Yankees game. I remember getting on a yacht cruise.
But it didn't take long for her to realize that her job was not about boat rides and baseball games. Ramaswamy was making lots of money, but she had no time to spend it. When she did go out with friends, she was never far from her phone, taking calls and answering emails.
What was always emphasized was, look, this is a client-facing business, and we serve our clients. Therefore, we need to drop everything anytime they ask us something.
That expectation got even worse during the pandemic. She moved to a different firm, and in December, she began to despair.
It was a Friday night, and I was sitting at home, and I worked until midnight that night.
She was living with her parents again in Arizona, thousands of miles away from Wall Street. And that Friday was her birthday.
I just remember hitting this point of absolute meltdown. Like, there was nothing going through my head except for, I can't do this anymore. I want to have a life. I want to be a real person. I want to be able to spend time with my family. I want to be able to take time for myself. And I didn't even have time to think about it.
Ramaswamy felt alone, but she wasn't. At Goldman Sachs, 13 analysts put together a presentation that was leaked and got a lot of attention. They told their bosses they were working until 3 in the morning. "My body physically hurts all the time," one banker wrote, "and mentally, I'm in a really dark place." In response, the CEO of Goldman Sachs acknowledged they deserve a break. They shouldn't have to work on Saturdays. There was burnout in banking before, but the pandemic has made it worse. Carrie Friedman is the head of HR at the financial firm Jefferies.
When you have nowhere to go, you end up working a whole lot more than maybe you needed to, but there was really nothing else to do, which is very dangerous.
Among the dangers, he says, are anxiety and depression brought on by exhaustion and isolation. Many of his firm's younger employees moved home or they lived alone in cities that were locked down.
It's, wait, I'm not going anywhere. I might as well keep working. You know, and basically, I think people were on call or felt like they had to be on call 24 hours a day.
Some banks have recognized burnout is an institutional problem, and many firms say to address it, they're going to pay even more. But Robert Wolf says that's not the answer. He was the chairman and CEO of UBS Americas.
Happiness means a lot right now.
Banks are competing for talent with tech, and there's a push to change company culture.
I never understood, even when I was running UBS, why literally we had to be in an environment where you would be working associates 24/7 looking for that 25th hour.
And to some extent, that's just the way it's been. Wolf started out at Salomon Brothers in the 1980s, and at that time, plenty of young bankers celebrated competition and greed.
It was a bit of the Wild West.
Back then, Wolf says it was work hard, play hard. But that's given way to what's now work hard, work hard. What hasn't changed is what attracts college students to a career that can be crushing.
I just graduated college. I can't believe I'm at one of the best firms. This is what was my goal. And now my goal is in the next few years to make a lot of money.
Money also motivated Anita Ramaswamy. She wanted financial independence. But beyond that,
you don't know what else is out there because you haven't had time to try it. Therefore, you think that what you're doing is just as good as it's ever going to get.
The pandemic gave her new perspective. It's one thing to work 18-hour days side by side with colleagues who are also working 18-hour days. But when you're doing that alone, in your childhood bedroom? After her birthday, Ramaswamy talked to her parents. They were sad they hadn't seen much of her, even though she'd been back home for weeks. A few days later, she quit. David Gura, NPR News, New York.
It's been more than a week since Jason Fried, CEO of the web software company Basecamp, made a blog post outlining some policy changes at the company. And one of those changes, no more politics at work. When it comes to talking about politics and current events on work accounts, Fried wrote, "It's become too much. It's a major distraction. It saps our energy and redirects our dialogue towards dark places." He went on, "It's not healthy and it hasn't served us well." The response? At least 20 employees have quit. Now, to talk more about what's unfolding at Basecamp, we turn to tech reporter Casey Newton, who's been following this. Welcome to the program.
Good to be here.
So 20 out of what I understand is something like 57, 60 employees is a lot. So what prompted this new policy?
Well, in February, the company began having discussions about a list that some workers had maintained for a while about names of customers that they found funny for some reason. Some of those were ethnic names, maybe of Asian or African descent. And the company started a conversation about why they had done that, why they felt bad about it. And it kind of begun to spiral from there. A committee was formed to work on issues of diversity, equity, and inclusion. And some very angry threads were posted to the internal Basecamp software that Basecamp makes. And it was out of those threads that this new policy emerged. The CEO wanted to shut those conversations down.
So was the goal to shut down what was happening in response, or to actually create an apolitical workplace, which is sort of how it's being reported?
The public narrative was that this was about stopping employees from discussing hot button political topics. But when I talked to employees, what they told me was all of those discussions that they'd been having internally were really about the company itself and how the company could be better and be a more just and equitable organization. So I think from the founder's perspective, though, I think they'd started to feel like the company was getting away from them a little bit. Like the employees were starting to have a few too many ideas about how the place should be run. And they wanted to sort of pull that back and make sure that they were in complete control.
You've spoken to other CEOs from different companies about this issue. What are they hearing, especially after this last year where, you know, a bunch of them put out all kinds of statements regarding maybe the Black Lives Matter movement or other things, kind of telling the public they were going to care about these issues more?
That's right. Well, you know, so certainly Basecamp is not the first tech company to come down and say that they don't want political discussions in the workplace. The cryptocurrency company Coinbase had kind of been the first one. And I think there are some CEOs in that kind of conservative to libertarian realm who like the idea of a politics-free workplace, you know, whatever that means. I think on the more liberal to progressive side, though, what I'm hearing from CEOs is they think that there is no way that you can eliminate these kinds of discussions from the workplace. But what you can do is channel them. You can create dedicated spaces inside company chat for workers to kind of go at it. And you can encourage employees to essentially ask for consent before wading in political topics. You know, maybe say something like, "Hey, you know, I would love to talk about that congressional race. Are you okay with that?" And they tell me that that's been a much more successful approach than trying to ban these conversations altogether.
Have you heard from any of the workers who have left the company or otherwise?
I have. And, you know, it's a really heartbreaking time for them. You know, something I will just never forget about this company is that when one employee said earlier this year that they'd like to start a committee to work on diversity issues, 20 people, about a third of the company, stepped up and volunteered to do it. That really shows you how invested they were in making this place a better workplace. And now I would say probably over half of those employees are gone. More might be leaving. So these were people who really loved Basecamp and thought it was a great place to work. And so these past few weeks have just been head spinning for them.
Finally, why do you think the tech industry is where we are seeing this very public discussion breakout?
The tech industry is where American workers have the most power and agency. They're well paid. They have savings. They're highly skilled. They can go out and get good jobs at other places. So they're less afraid of speaking out than maybe a blue collar worker might be. So it's a really interesting thing to watch, because I think as the tech industry has these conversations more and more, I sort of assume that they're going to begin filtering down to other parts of the economy.
That is Casey Newton, founder and editor of Platformer, a daily newsletter about big tech and democracy, and also a contributing editor at The Verge. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Adi.
Context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade broadcasting from a dark place. This is not our compensatory call-in, which is every Saturday, where we say, please, no metaphors and such. But that last few minutes there is exactly why. We went two different segments talking about two totally different topics, right? We're talking about burnout, people working at Wall Street, and it's in a dark place. And then we totally transition. And we're talking about politics and Black Lives Matter in the workplace. Ooh, we ended up in a dark place. Metaphors, always, they are transporting the ideas of white supremacy, racism, black get back, dark place. Anywho, this is Neutralizing Workplace Racism. If we have any victims of white supremacy in the known universe, you have figured out some tips. These are things that keep you out of a dark place, in the workplace at least. If you need time off, hey, I don't want to work 120 hours a week. I don't want to work every Sunday. I want time to go see my family members. You don't have those type of problems. You can talk to your manager, supervisor, and boop, problem is squashed. They don't do that in your workplace. They don't sit around and keep a list of Asian and African names. Sounds like they could have just said a list of non-white. That right there, we just had that conversation. In my view, that makes it crystal. They kept a list of non-white names to mock and ridicule. Now, we got overstanding about what we got here. White people, make it clear, white people kept a list of non-white names to mock and ridicule. Anyway, but you don't have those problems in your workplace. They call people by their proper name every time. They don't sit around and gossip and make racist insults. And if you report that, you report it one time and the problem is solved. We don't tolerate racists here. We grab you by your ear and whammo, toss you out on the street. See, if you have figured out how to do that, please put this here number on speed dial and be the first person to get a hand up. 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. If we have folks who certainly, if you have problems, some things you would appreciate getting a suggestion or two to kind of help solve problems without creating new problems, always welcome. The number 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Let's see, I'm going to read one report. I did not include the audio because there was no audio, but this is one that we did not just hear. Florida, our caller down in Florida, I think this is close to his neck of the woods, Wildwood, Florida. I'm not sure if this is in the northern part of the state or elsewhere, but anywho, Florida woman throws Whopper, like the red meat hamburger, or it might have been one of the vegan ones because I think they got the Impossible, so it could have been one of their non-meat, but she throws a Whopper, spews racist insults at a Burger King worker. I won't read the whole thing, but it says a Florida woman was arrested after allegedly throwing a Whopper at a Burger King worker while also spewing racial slurs. According to the police report, 77, she's supposed to be at home vaccinated and, you know, hoping to ride this here thing out. She is out eating red meat and throwing racist tantrums. Like, oh my goodness. 77-year-old Judith Ann Black was not happy with a Whopper sandwich she had ordered at a Burger King in Wildwood on Friday and began yelling at the checkout counter. The report went on to say that Black, white woman, then threw the Whopper at a restaurant worker, hitting the worker in the back just below the neck. The victim stated that Black also said, "Shut up, you black bitch," in quotes, and also heard Black call her nigger. Wildwood police responded and used surveillance video to help track down Black, who lives in the Villages. Police say Black admitted to throwing the Whopper and making racial slurs. She was charged with battery and evidence of prejudice while committing a crime. Now, see, evidence of prejudice while committing it. Couldn't you? Why is it? Is that a law? You can't just say that she was practicing racism. You can't just call it. It's got to be evidence of prejudice, hate crime. It's got to be some other tacky nonsense. It can't just be this here white woman, Judith, 77-year-old, was practicing racism. Anywho, I've said this for a long time because there have been so many of these incidents. These type of things happen anyway, but especially since the pandemic. These have been the type of things where it wouldn't have surprised me if Judith Back had had like a 9mm in her purse. Like, you know, my Whopper was overcooked. You know, you didn't put fresh tomatoes on my sandwich, you know. I got to let off a cap, because that's the type of year it's been. It's been so many of these. Even down in Florida, they had that woman. She was proud. She had her Florida Gators. That's North Florida. She had her Florida Gators shirt on. It was black delivery drivers. She, what are you niggas doing here? And she just kept saying, wait a minute, it's 2021. You can't be just calling us niggas. Shut up, nigga. I say nigga whenever I feel like it. Niggas come out here and block my street and tell me what I can say. You see my Florida Gator shirt on? We used to gator chomp nigga babies like you. Tell me I can't say nigga. These niggas, remember that one? That was just a couple days ago. Got to have a code. I said that you should talk to your supervisor. Apparently, it doesn't matter where you are. I say especially if you do any sort of delivery driving, anything like that, where you might end up in a predominantly white area, that type of thing. But any type of job, if you're going to be working with the public, I would have a serious conversation. Workplace safety. What should we do? Because people are becoming hostile about everything. Hostile about a mask. You don't have a mask. Distancing. You put pickles on my sandwich. Anything. What is our policy? What do we do? If someone gets rowdy, do we call the police? If I don't feel safe, and that would have to be a major one, because it can't just be, you know, that they have to do this, because they might look at that and say, well, hey, she threw a Whopper. She was upset. That's not gonna. If I don't feel safe, the policy is when there's an unsafe work environment, we should do bam and get that. Look at the policy and procedure. But I would go over all of that, because these type of incidents are very, very common and probably will be for the foreseeable future. And you have so many new gun owners, white, non-white, dangerous times. Now, as for the audio segments that we did hear, they started off and they were talking about the new divide. They talked about the racial health divide and disparities and all that, and the digital divide and all this other nonsense. And now they got the work, I guess, work from home, however you want to call it, work from home divide. The people who were able to just sit on Zoom in their footies for the past 14 months, while the disposable workers, a.k.a. essentials, have had to go out and just fight through it the last 12 months or so, and talking about how that might be a permanent change, where it might be that you have a lot of employees. And that was funny, because that report, the first one that was in Seattle, where they were talking about it might be permanent, where you have a lot of folks, white people probably, in these higher paying jobs, tech industry, that type of thing, where they're not going into the office, you know, 5 days a week, 6 days a week. That's, you know, that era is done. Like, it's going to be, as they keep saying, a hybrid type situation. Maybe I go in 2 days a week. Maybe I go in 3 days a week. Maybe I go in 1 day a week. And I'm at home the rest of the time. They're going to say a lot of non-white people. And they keep saying blue collar. Even that right there, blue is non-white. They got white collar and blue collar. They said the blue collar workers, they're not going to have that option. You have to go into the factory. We're going to need you to get in here and clean this toilet, that type of thing. We're going to need you to get even, you know, come in and put coal on the train tracks, that type of thing. Even when they were talking about the train, was thinking it's not going to be that the train operator is going to be doing this from his living room. It's going to be that will be operated. There will be no more human train operators. That's what it'll be. But, you know, be that as it may, I thought that was important because we've had, you know, Cal's listeners, we have had some who said, yes, I've either been hybrid or have at least had the option of working from home. We've had a number of folks who said that. We've had a lot of others who said, nope, didn't have that option. You know, delivery drivers and other components, educators, so-called disposable employees, where that's not been an option at all. We talked about people who, some folks, they squirreled away some of their saved days, vacation days and such, so that when they do have to return to the office, they'll have mental health time to spare in dealing with the adjustment of having to be around people again. But that's been huge. Even I think our Bay Area mom, where she's an educator, she hasn't been able to sit at home, you know, in her sandals and what have you, feet propped up, chilling, doing work. She's had to go out. And then her supervisor, white woman, has been chilling at home, missing appointments, you know, halfway working, doing whatever, that's, you know, system of white supremacy on display once again. And they, again, didn't use the word prejudice there, didn't use the word white supremacy or racism, didn't use the word power, they used the word privilege. The word trickery through and through. Let's see, then they had the segment talking about burnout. Now, we talked about that before, and I'd said that we hadn't talked about it enough. It sounding like some of these high-powered jobs where white people working at Wall Street, supposed to the lure of making a lot of money, and you sacrifice a lot of your time and energy to, you know, serve and work for these companies, be it their every beck and call. I would say make an evaluation. They talked about that in that report, and having time. I say that all the time. Really value your time and energy. Make sure that you take time to evaluate, like, the place that I'm working, like, is this where I want to be? Is this healthy? I mean, that is a huge one. Is this a healthy work environment for me? If you don't have time to honestly ask yourself and answer those questions, that is a definite no to the second question. Is this a healthy environment for me? Absolutely not. I don't even have time to sit down and think about that question and do a checklist like, well, we do have, let's see, a sauna benefit and a gym membership and I can't even do that because I never have time to use it because I'm working all the time. We got 120 hours of work to do. Make an evaluation, because we've had, I think, a lot of folks who said, yeah, this is not a healthy environment and I need to be working on an exit strategy because either I am burned out or am rapidly heading in that direction. We heard Pamela Evans Harris, greatly missed, but we heard her at the beginning before we went live, where she wrote about this in her work, Black Love is a Revolutionary Act, formerly the worst book ever. But she wrote about that and the impact of workplace trauma and how it can. She didn't use the term burnout, but I mean, that's exactly what it is. The weight gain or weight loss, whichever spectrum, and being bewildered and confused, and how it can impact your family member. All of that. Symptoms of exit strategy. I need to be working on exit strategy. This is a totally unhealthy work environment. I need to get out of here. Let's see. And then the last dark place, man. Metaphors, the metaphors. I can't stress that enough. Ending up in a dark place from being in an unhealthy work burnout situation. And then you are also in a dark place discussing politics in the workplace. All I'll say is, Gus T. Renegade, we've been doing workplace racism for years. I cannot think of a single situation, not one, where black people going on their job and talking to anybody, white people, non-white people, their friends, homies, talking to them about politics and current events worked out in a constructive manner, meaning some good things, constructive things happened for them. They got a raise, they got a promotion, they got a new water cooler. I've never heard any of that. If anybody knows any reports of that where you went in and, you know, you got the chin wagging about Sandra Bland, Rodney King, Derek Chauvin, President Obama, the Capitol insurrection, whatever, Flint water situation, whatever. You got to talking about things that are totally unrelated to your job. What are your views on, you know, who's going to run for sanitation control or whatever? And hey, it worked out. We had a grand old conversation. We didn't agree on everything. We exchanged literature and views, and I got a few. I mean, hey, if that let us know, we'll all learn something. I haven't seen that. I've seen the exact opposite. And even presenting it in the rubric of, well, you know, we have to talk about these things and we're human and we spend time together, it'll be more productive. No, what they talked about with the base camp situation, that's what I've heard, where the people got engaged in this. And I would be remiss. They said that they had a thread that some of this started. Hey, we got folks here who got a list of African and Asian names that we mock. Almost sounds like racist jokes. Maybe my, you know, little peanut sized Negro brain just didn't figure it right. But it almost sounds like that type of thing, because I've heard that before, even in a workplace context where white people do that exact type of thing. Sit around and ridicule the names of non-white people and make racist jokes. I even had a cow's investor tell me this happened on her job. This is a non-white, non-black person, so-called Asian. She said she was at work and she walked into a room. It was just these two white people were there by themselves, and they were talking to each other, and they said, hey, I don't have any silverware here. So imagine I have some silverware. And so they grabbed, I guess, two forks or whatever, and they said, hey, what is this? And they threw the forks on the floor, and so it'd be clink, 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 clink. And they said, that's the sound of Chinese people coming up with names for their children. Clink, clink. I'm dying, I'm getting a cramp. She says she walked in on that, right? So she catches the punchline. She's so-called Asian. She says, oh, that's funny. And so she grabbed some silverware and threw it on the, she said, that's how they came up with my name. And turned around and question lame, said it like a cow's investor, question lame. Woo. So they're, oh my God, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? So they're all wigging out for a week or what happened. I mean, this is very common. Matter of fact, it's not in my top 10, but it is constructive. Two-faced racism. Dr. Joe Feagin, suspected racist guest on the Cows back in 2010. He has a whole chapter in his book talking about racism in the food industry and this sort of, you know, behavior, widespread. Anyway, talking about non-white people. Anyway, the base camp situation. So they're ridiculing the names of non-white people. They start their list, and they're going to get a group together to address diversity in the workplace, not racism. And then there's backlash. Apparently people get upset about this and they end up in a dark place. And so then they say, forget all this. No discussing politics in the workplace, which is exactly the way Gus T felt about this in the first place. Now, I would add a side note. So if someone makes a report, apparently there is a list of names of customers. I think it's just not like they just went and got random names out of the phone book. But apparently there's a list of names of our clients that is used for mock and ridicule. Is that a professional appropriate conduct for the workplace? You could ask that type of a question and see. Now, I don't know if that's discussing politics in the workplace, but I mean, you could frame that in the form of a question, I think. See if this is, you know, appropriate. Should we be doing this? But the rest of it, like, no, I'm not here to talk about Black Lives Matter. I'm not here to talk about, you know, who's going to run for dog catcher. I don't care what you think about President Trump, President Biden, Vice President Kamala Harris, nothing else. If we're here to do widgets, let's do the widgets. If we're here to work on base camp, let's do base camp. Whatever the job is, let's do that. I'm not here to talk about anything else. I do not discuss politics, current events in the workplace, not even with other Black people. Make it plain. they can say whatever they want. You can study, you can question, you can listen. I would value that highly, but yeah, you're not paid. And again, I've not seen where anything constructive happens. Pardon me, had to sneeze. I've not seen where anything constructive happens, even where they discontinue mocking the names of non-white people. If anything, they'll add your list to the names of non-white names to mock. And if anything, I'd add this. I would have loved to have heard what were the names that they mocked and what were said exactly. Like, did they have whole lists of jokes and things and all that? Like, let's get all that. That would be awesome. What does it mean to be white? That'd be another one. I don't think you can have a list of names of non-white people and be mocking them in the workplace and then tell me that, oh yeah, I'm ignorant about racism. I don't know nothing about, you know, what it means to mistreat non-white people. Right. Right. Anywho, let's see. Oh, I had, it was Chris Rock. I have to find another. There's another report I just saw today on workplace racism where they were doing the Chris Rock quote. I said, everyone, Chris Rock is going to be the preeminent critical race scholar of all time. Like, when they look back like 5,000 years from now, it's not going to be Dr. Francis Cress Welsing. It's not going to be Tim Wise. It's going to be Chris Rock. He's going to be quoted so many times in so many different ways about racism, white supremacy. We are all just wasting our time and playing runner-up to Mr. Rock. I'll find it later on. The email is untiljustice@gmail.com. Untiljustice@gmail.com. Oh, that's not even as far as I thought. Right in front of my face, but I'll read it later. Getting to one of the emails, and then we'll get the folks that called in. Let's see. Let me get my cursor over. Okay, this is for Emmy. So I think last week she called in and said that she had a person show up on her job, I believe non-white, non-black, who showed up on her job, and they were having some sort of discussion just about goals, all this, as she's training her. And she says, I guess at some point this person said that, you know, they were pursuing some sort of school or education. And he's like, oh, that's great. You know, don't get bogged down here, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, about a day or so later, her employer, they let her know that, you know, she should not be bad mouthing the company, and that this new person reported that, you know, she said some, I guess, unprofessional things and maybe was even inappropriate in the way that she dealt with some of the children. So she gave us an update on all of this, like, oh, I don't want to train her anymore if that's going to be the case. And what did I say? And all this back and forth. And she even, they tried to get her to continue training this new employee. And Amy refused, took a day off. I thought that was great black self-respect. So that's the kind of minimal update that I can offer. It's in the archives the past 2 weeks where she's given us a lot of details on this. Maybe we'll get a third update today. Last week it was in installments, in fact. All right, so person who wrote in, they're responding, victim of racism. Listening to Neutralizing Workplace Racism and the Emmy saga and her situation is exactly why we should treat certain other non-black groups like Asians, Mexicans, etc., as though they are white. They are not to be trusted and navigate in the system as if they are white, and we should treat them as such. Victim in Ohio. VGQ, victims guaranteed, qualified. The only thing that I can say is, have you figured out a means to trust individuals who are classified as black? If so, please write in immediately, because I think I've said, I just said it today, I guess I'll continue saying it. I've said, do not trust anyone with regards to talking about politics in a workplace situation. In fact, do not think of anyone. Non-white people, black people. I think I've said it consistently for years. If my mother, back when we were reading Orenthal James Simpson, I said, if Johnny L. Cochran Jr., we're reading Geronimo Pratt right now, Neely Fuller Jr., and my mom were there and say, hey, we're talking about the Derek Chauvin situation. Do you want to join us? In my mind, I'm thinking these troublemaking Negroes. Woo! I keep on walking. I don't care that they're all classified as black. One of them being my mom. I'm good. I said the whole time, I have not seen anybody. If we have anybody here, you can add this one too. If you, the person who wrote in, if you have seen any constructive result from a black person talking about politics, current events, non-work related issues with another individual classified as black on the job, you can share that one too. That'll be a first for workplace racism also. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying regardless of the melanin content or lack of melanin content, you don't have homies in the workplace, period. That's how you avoid problems. We have in the archives lots, in fact, not one, many folks who went in with that way of thinking that, oh, this is my brother, black sister, right on, and all of that. And let me hip you to some Neely Fuller Jr. and let's talk about this and all this non-way, and then ended up with all kinds of problems. That's been my experience. You don't have home. Even Scotty Reed, remember that? That wasn't that long ago where he said he was talking about his daughter. He said she was at work and it was some other black people who tried to get her in trouble and were going into her salary and all this other stuff. You don't have homies in the workplace, regardless of their racial classification. But again, if you have a situation where, hey, these are some black people in a workplace environment where we didn't go to kindergarten together, a random black person that I met in the workplace, and we started chopping it up about politics and random non-work related topics, and things worked out spectacularly. They got less confused about racism, and or I got less confused about racism. We became friends. It was awesome. If people have that story, share. 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Incidentally, if we are in a system of white supremacy racism, I think there's a substantial amount of evidence that so-called Asians and Mexicans do not move through the system of white supremacy as though they are white. They may not be treated as though they are classified as black get back, but I do not think a substantial amount of individuals who are classified as so-called Asian and or Mexican, I do not think that they are able to move as though they are classified as white. We were just talking about the Vietnam War yesterday, Jesters for one, but staying on topic, neutralizing workplace racism. Number 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Let's see. Folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have commentary to share, feel free. If you have emails to share, it is untiljustice@gmail.com. Let's see. Bay Area Mom, you are with us. We'll nab other hands as I see them.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Greetings to you and the callers on the line. I was thinking about the one of the clips you played about burnout. And especially with the salary positions, I do get it that the digital pay list was two. So it was one with the salary versus hourly workers get the hourly workers. I guess they don't get the option to work from home versus the salary, and I've noticed that too, but they Zoom them a lot. There's a lot of Zoom work on those some of the meetings for particular jobs with salary paid employees. And back to the burnout, I see that too. I know a lady who they would pay her salary, of course, because you're showing you can do it, I can do it, I can go above and beyond, I can do it,
and they let you do it, and they give you the salary and, you know, other little bells and whistles for the moment to get you, you know, your adrenaline going, and you're working, phone ringing, your company phone. And she was able to get a house, and yeah, she was kind of shifted her attitude a bit because she believed that, you know, she wasn't who she was. And then, you know, after it's all over, this is still our company. Thanks for your hard work. Here's portions of severance or whatever, and we're going to flip our money. You're going to do whatever you do. So she was able to retire where, you know, she's was under 50, able to retire. But life calls, and she had to go back to work, however, the hotel, whatever you got to do, and then try to get back into a company that will pay you a portion of what you were making before, because your mortgage on that house is due, the taxes are due, and then you don't understand all the crunches that are going on around you because you're so busy working to build someone else's company. So I could relate to that. And then either you can move back home with your mom or your grandma or your sister or sell your stuff. And it's a lot. It's very challenging, that burnout. And then you have to think, was it worth it? You know, so that's what's racism for me. So I'm finishing my first week of not being at work, and I did doctor's appointments and that kind of thing. I guess maybe I'll deal with the rest next week. I requested another week off, so I got the next week off, so I'll go back the week after, and doing other little things to position myself to see if I can, how to transition out of this. I'm going to go back, but I'm going back to, because that's where I work, but my resume is updated. So I resent the information because I was supposed to go back yesterday. I resubmitted my letter from the doctor, and it made it to where it's not yesterday. So I'm sure that chat hides because you want to get that money, right? But I have the time to take off. I mean, you know, I have the leave, so I need it. I noticed that the supervisor I had sent the email to let him know she was out on leave, but I had also let scheduling know as well, so to kind of cover myself. And then someone said, you send it to another department. So I just sent the updated request off or work order to whatever they said, and then carbon copied the other person as well, just to cover myself. And it's pretty good. I'm working on myself. I'm trying to, you know, heal, do whatever I can to get myself back into gear and not let these people have me all stressed out, because life still goes on. I'm not there, right? But they're still doing whatever they have to do. So that's all I'll say. And thank you for taking my call.
Much obliged for the update, our Bay Area mom. I just, if it's all right to ask, I've been paying attention as well to the vaccine policy, and I know we talked about that. Your young scholar up in New England, they've had a number of schools, some of the big California institutions. I think the University of California system, like UC Berkeley, UC Davis, all those schools, they're requiring vaccines for the fall. Rutgers is requiring vaccines for the fall. Have you had any updates with regards to your son? And yeah, I know you were telling us before, like, lots of pressure, lots of propaganda for him to get that vaccine, and he's holding out. Any updates on his status?
Yes. So they in August, or the fall, maybe that's their fall, they will be required to be vaccinated to be on campus. So yes, they everybody came together with that vaccination.
Yikes. Do they have any exceptions, or what do you, is that, at least you, looks like you'll have, what, 4 months to, go ahead.
You go.
I was just going to ask if they had any exemptions so that he could, you know, find a way to not do it. I know you were pretty unequivocal about not wanting him to be vaccinated. So you got 4 months to kind of figure out what you, how you want to deal with that.
Well, you said something about, well, I know for his flu shot, they did the religious exemption. So him and a couple other people that are dodging, or not dodging, trying not to get injected with the needle, they do it like that, the religious exemption, or since it's not actual law, they kind of just sway it. And I think he'll be okay. He's not as stressed out about it as he was. It's just day by day. But he was very, very confused because it's the pressure, and that pressure makes you want to comply, you know, because it's so much surrounding pressure. Now the roommates are going to, because I think school is out. This is the week of the finals. This is the last day of finals. So he's, you know, everybody's going in their different directions. So, and that's probably too why they wanted to hurry up and do what they had to do so they can, you know, go and do what they do their thing. So that's all.
Much obliged. What? Mother's Day is supposed to be coming up, so-called. Parenting is a super hard job. Whew, man. If we have other attempted parents, if you're, you know, if you have offspring that are in school and they're kind of navigating the whole vaccine situation or all of that, you know, how they're dealing with it, feel free to share. I'm sure we have other parents who are trying to deal with that as best they can. Wow, that is a lot to, yeah, because I wasn't even really thinking about it in that context in terms of summer is coming and they were already acting a fool for spring break. So, you know, it's really cut a full time now for some. Matter of fact, I can even pause and give you my own. So where I live now in Seattle, I am very close to the University of Washington. I could walk to the University of Washington if I wanted to. I was there, what day was that? Just a couple days ago. These students, they have, I guess, some limited session. It's not full force, but I mean, they have some students on campus. These students are there. You can think about this in context with her child, who's with three roommates who are vaccinated. So these students, all of them appear like they would be classified as white. They all look like they would probably be under 21, but I didn't card them. They're outside, and it's like, it's more than three of them, guys and gals. And so they're talking loud. Timmy, did you bring the jungle juice? I had to go look to see what the ingredients are in jungle juice because I'm not a drinker. Did you bring the jungle juice, Timmy? And they've got like a big thermos and they're just passing it between them drinking. And they said, "What? You got the, okay. Did I get my mask? Wait a minute. Do I have my, I don't know if I, let me see. I may have left my mask. Well, we got the jungle juice. Let's go. And I'm looking like, what? Y'all are not distancing, you're drinking out of the same cup. Like, this could be the next governor of Washington State. And there they go, troughing off, you know, out to the university. Like, maybe the jungle juice is what provides immunity. Like, maybe you don't need to be concerned about having a mask or distancing if you have an appropriate consumption of jungle juice. Hopefully, that is not the young folks that your son is around up in New England. But I saw that firsthand right here, University of Washington, future leaders of the Evergreen State, jungle juice, no mask, but jungle juice. Anyway, with your job situation, like, that is black self-respect, requesting the extra week off, like, take time to heal. Like, I think a lot of us, we get pressured, like you were talking about, like, I'm gonna show them, I'm gonna get work all the overtime and take all the difficult assignments and just work. John Henryism to really prove that I'm worth something and all the rest of it, and just end up really destroying our health and never get any of the kudos that we're looking for or infrequently getting them. Get that rest, as you said, taking time. You've been telling us before that you just felt tired, like you weren't getting enough rest and such. Allow your body to rest so that you can think, process, work on that exit strategy. But spectacular, in my opinion. Get that extra time off to really take care and just nourish yourself. That's something that is denied Black people so frequently in work situations. So, yeah, I'm just thankful you're able to take the time that you need, invest in you. You don't have to worry about those children for a while. And the folks, as you said, the tacky folks on your job, they can, you know, pluck somebody else's nerves while you get your act together, work on that exit strategy. Not get your act together, but, you know, work on that exit strategy. Words are important. Much obliged, Bay Area mom. Number again is 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-#. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Other folks with a hand up, if you have commentary to share, line should be open. Proceed.
Hello.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, how are you? I wanted to respond to, I believe her name is Irie, her request for information on grants or funds for business, for her business. Is this the appropriate platform or to provide some resources for her?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if she's listening tonight, but I wanted to ask in which sector or industry her business is in.
I'm not aware if she's listening live, but Do I know it? I'm not sure if I recall if she told us the exact field that her business is in.
Okay. Well, I wanted to pass along, I think I have at least three funding resources for her. Mm-hmm. The first one is, the website is iamsogal.com, I-A-M, and then S like Sam, O-G-A-L.com. And if she would go to that website and then click on Startup Grant, and there are specific funds for Black women entrepreneurs, because I know that she mentioned, you know, wanting to look into grants or funds that are specifically for Black women. And then the second one is poise.com, and this particular entity provides financial assistance in the form of funding, grants, for women-owned businesses. It doesn't say specifically for Black women, but it does offer micro grants and individual grants to women. And she clicks on that, she'll see the grant link there. And then the third one is ambergrantsforwomen.com. And this is also geared for women in general. And if she clicks on that, she will find the page that has the grant information. And then the last one that I have is for beauty-based businesses, and it's specifically for Black-owned beauty-based businesses. But I'm not sure in which sector her business lies, so I wasn't sure if that would pertain to her business, but I just wanted to pass along those resources for her. Thank you.
Oh, that is spectacular. I messaged her while you were sharing. So if she dials in so that she can be more specific, about her field of where she's working at, where her business is, then we can get more details, or at minimum, she can, you know, dial in and listen specifically to this segment and check it out or what have you. And then, you know, maybe she'll dial in tomorrow or sometime soon. But, oh man, that is spectacular. Like, I'm so glad you could dial in to try to help out another black female entrepreneur.
Yes, thank you. Oh, you're so welcome. And I'm very happy to help because no, thank you, sir. Thank you.
Black self-respect. Say that again. Like, man, black self-respect, ma'am. Before we move along, did you have any examples of where you have shared in your work experience where you have talked about non-work-related subject matter, current events, politics, with people who are classified as black, and it ended up being something constructive?
No, not really. It never has really been anything constructive. I've just never had good experiences like that with other non-white black people on the job. And so that's why when I'm on the job at my desk, I'm basically quiet. I'm like an introvert, and people wonder why, but it just doesn't, it hasn't led to anything positive, because I actually had there was an incident at my job where another black female actually started to bully me, and I actually had to just contact security on her, and it just wound up being just something very negative. So I just keep to myself. I don't discuss anything related to politics or religion to black people or, you know, any other group, whites or other non-whites. But yeah, thanks.
Oof. Did I mishear that? Like, you said you had to call security on a black female. Like, that didn't start from you all having a conversation about politics or something not related to work, did it?
It did somewhat, because I noticed that she was very just overly friendly. And even when we first met, she started sharing things, personal things about her life that, you know, you don't share those things with people that you just met. And something told me, you know, put a red flag up in my mind, you know, to say that, well, I need to be more careful when it comes to befriending people at work, because sometimes we don't know what backgrounds people come from. And so some people can be overly emotional, and they overshare things about their life, and then they expect you to be, you know, as open. And I think she realized that. And then at one point it just became overheated. And that's when she just began bullying me. And she even embarrassed me in front of the other staff members who were sitting at their desk. And of course, no one came out to assist me. And these were mostly white people, and the same people who were trying to be friendly with me, but in that instance, they couldn't even come to in my defense. So it just wasn't anything that was productive for me. So yeah, thanks.
Wow. I know that's not what you called in to share, but wow. Thank you for disclosing and just being truthful, because Pamela Evans-Harris, Miss Dearly, she talked about that, just, you know, sharing some of the things that happen in our workplace. We can learn a lot about how the system works. And I think a lot of us have experienced that, just really bad experience from other victims. They might be classified as black, but I mean, that's horrible if it gets to the point where you have to call security. Oh my gosh. Like, whoa.
Absolutely. And in the end, the security department actually wanted to take further action against her, but she was protected. She was protected by her boss. But then ultimately, I think a few months later, I had heard that she had then been fired by her boss because she continued on this bullying rampage, you know, towards other females. I don't know if these other females were black, and they granted her retirement in the end. So, yeah, it's I found that it's just not worth it in, generally. Yeah, so thanks.
What a terrible experience on the planet. I mean, even if this is like the worst, you know, non-white person, like she said, I mean, I do not want to be humiliated and embarrassed, like, period, much less in a work situation in front of other white people. Like, oh my God.
Exactly.
Who
that
wants
was very embarrassing. Yeah.
You don't have to tell me, like, my God, who wants to go through that? And then from a black person, like, oh my God, even right. With that, I would not want to have to call security. And then security is saying, oh, we need to escalate. Like, oh my God, against another black person.
Right.
Like, oh, worst exactly. Day on the planet. Burnout, exactly what we talked about. Burn out. I mean, and
exactly.
What she said, those red flags, I quote Gavin DeBecker all the time. He is a white author, and he did work for the prosecution against O.J. Simpson. All of that said, his book is constructive. He talks about those red flags. You said she came in when you first met her, and she was sharing a whole lot of unnecessary, personal information and all this sharing, those
exactly.
Type of things. Take that seriously. And in fact, we just heard that yesterday too. That's two plugs for the book club. Geronimo Pratt said the same thing. In fact, he just said it yesterday that he had a code for minimizing conflict in prison. And he said that it was not to get involved in the personal lives of other people. That was, it was a long list, but that was a big one right there. And I said, man, bang, that's the workplace. Like, I'm not trying to hear all about your affairs, and I really don't want to hear a whole lot about, you know, problems with your children and what they did in school and all that. Hey, let's just stick to the job. Like, people who get into doing all of that, like, red flag, like, whoa, like, we do not have appropriate boundaries. I'm not your therapist. I'm not your family member. We just work in a cubicle on the same hall. That's it.
Right, exactly. What you say is profound. That's very true. That's it? Yep. Exactly.
Oof. Much obliged for sharing, ma'am. I'll see if we get Irie to get more details and, you know, all that. But we'll work with what we have until then. But much obliged for sharing. Black self-respect for sure. Oof. If we have... I almost need a commercial to recuperate from that. Like, my God. And we've had so much of that. That's what I'm saying. Like, Pam even talked about that, where she would have other black people. She didn't say these were Mexicans. She didn't say that these were Latinas. She didn't say that these were Koreans. She said it was other black people would come on her job, and the same thing. They would name call. They would gossip. They would mistreat and abuse other black people, and they would do it for... ridicule and humiliate other black people for the entertainment of white people. Exactly what she just said. She said the white people, they would sit there, they wouldn't intervene and say, come on now, folks, let's be professional. That's not, you know, appropriate conduct for the workplace. And they would sit back and almost get their popcorn and, woohoo, look at the show we got today. This is great. And she said she would have to endure this for like weeks at a time. Like, that this would go on. That's what I mean. Like, it just cannot be any sort of expectation. Like, I'm at my job, even if I work with, I've said that for years, even if I work with all black people. We got that in the archives too. Black people work with exclusively black people, and you can't talk about politics and current events there either. Dr. Welsing said all the time, 99% of black people, non-white people, do not understand white supremacy racism. That alone is going to make it very difficult to have a logical conversation about anything. Even in the workplace, the best we can do, let's just stay on whatever our task is. If we're supposed to be making the spaceships, let's make the spaceship. If we're supposed to be buffing the floor, let's buff the floor. Like, that's it. We're not here. Let's go over the OJ.
What do you think about Joe Biden? Unless they just want to talk. And even if it's another non-white person, like, I don't even know if I would want to encourage that. Like, let's, I would even have to tell, like, I don't do politics in the workplace. Like, just found, takes us to a dark place. That's what they said immediately. It takes us to a dark place. Security has to get involved. Let's just get back to buffing the floor right on, sir. Super courteous, but we just don't do all that because, yeah, that's not even what we're paid for. We're off task. As I've said, it's lots of reasons. Because even if you find somebody, you sit down at that table with Johnny Cochran, Neely Fuller Jr., Gus T's mom, and everybody is in unison and agreement. Even if that's the case, you're at work. All the other people that you work with, they probably are not going to agree. And they might not be pleased about seeing you and Fuller and Cochran and Gus T's mama talking courteously about anything, much less racism. It's lots of reasons to avoid, you know, all this in the workplace. Number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Getting our emails in as we roll. Let me see. Whoops. That was almost said. I could have used that earlier when I was trying to find a fork or something. Let me see. Different person wrote in. Black female, victim of racism. We had a meeting with the higher-ups for any questions we may have. I asked a question, bravo, because my supervisor likes to lie a lot. And when I asked, my supervisor immediately went to save herself from the scrutiny from the higher-ups. My second part is that my supervisor has us answering to another supervisor while she is on shift. There's no reason for this, as the other lady is not our supervisor, but we have to answer to her and say good morning. It's ridiculous. That's just odd. Like, I don't understand. I've never heard that. Why am I answering to someone else if you're actually, I could see if she was going to be out of town or whatever, under the weather, as they say, for a period of time. Like, oh, okay. But I mean, if you're here and functional, like, why are you being compensated as a supervisor if you're not going to supervise? Any questions? If there is confusion, ambiguity about policy or enforcement of policy, asking questions. Exactly what she did. The more powerful white people are present, ask questions publicly and do so in a super courteous, professional manner where you're not indicting anybody as a liar. You don't have to say that. You don't even have to call anyone's name. You just want to get clarification about policy and procedure. No one should ever have a problem with an employee requesting clarification about policy and procedure, like, ever. In my opinion, the only people who would oppose, we want policy and procedure to be ambiguous, people, we intend to do some rule breaking until we have incorrect intentions. It is to our advantage. Even if we're enforcing, it's to our advantage for this to be vague. So it'll be difficult to figure out exactly what the policy is. Then we can make it up as we go. That type of thing. People who have incorrect intentions, they do not want policy and procedure to be unambiguous. Make it plain, as they say. Lovely. Ask questions. And I said this, you can do that in a whole lot of situations. I've said that it can even be allegations of sexual misconduct where you can just ask for clarity. Is it company policy? Is it acceptable to fondle the behinds of other employees? And if not, what should happen if that sort of behavior is taking place? You don't have to name anyone and say, Ned has been doing this. Sheila has been grabbing me from behind whenever I get it. They don't have to do any of that. Just what is it? Maybe grabbing behinds is acceptable here. I just want to know. And if it's not, what should happen if someone is getting a little reckless with, you know, grabbing of hind parts? What should happen?
Now we get clarification. And the other thing, exactly as she had in the email, hey, I think they, when you throw a rock, often the person struck, they will holler. Now that will happen sometimes. The person will indict themselves by having to do all this speaking up. And hey, wait a minute now. We weren't even talking about patting behinds and all the rest. I don't know what that has to do with them. Like, a lot of protesting. So that will happen a lot of times. But yeah, as long as you're professional, courteous, I think that is a great strategy. Asking questions, period. Always spectacular. That puts you in the learning mode. You will get information. Even if they don't ask, answer your question. You have learned something. So always think, it's very few times where you can go wrong asking questions, especially if you are asking sincerely, you're asking courteously, professionally. It's hard to go wrong as asking a question. At worst, they don't give you an answer, which is awesome too. You can use that as well. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, commentary to share, line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Namaste. Greetings, Emmy. Did you hear the commentary the person wrote in? I think she was the first person who wrote in who had suggestions for you.
No, I didn't. I jumped on the call a little late.
Oh, okay. Let's see. It wasn't too long. I'll cycle back and read it again. She said, listening to Neutralizing Workplace Racism and the Emmy saga and her situation is exactly why we should treat certain other non-black groups like Asians, Mexicans, etc. as though they are white. They are not to be trusted and navigate in this system as if they are white, and we should treat them as such. Victim in Ohio.
Well, namaskaram. You good? Greetings, beautiful people, to the person who wrote. Thank you very much for listening to my saga and writing, you know, some suggestions for me or something for me to consider. I am really appreciative of that because I was so stressed when I was telling you all about that. And it's really changed the, you know, the month of May, how I was going to proceed with my job. She said what she said, or whoever, if that was a male writer, a man writer, they said what they said. My code is still the same, you know. I keep it all about work, and I thought I had kept it all about work even with that person, you know. Perhaps in retrospect, in hindsight, my delivery, although direct, blunt, laconic, concise, and to the point, could be adjusted, and maybe I could read the room a little better, although she didn't give me anything to let me know that I couldn't be, you know, honest, because I think that is something that she doesn't do well with. So I think that is the part of my communication delivery that was perhaps not really refined, because I like to just let you know, what it is and what you can expect from me. Come to find out, she grew up in foster care and was triggered. So it really had nothing to do with me, you know, which is a lot of times how things are, you know, when other people are coming at you, attacking you, criticizing you a lot of times, or me, let me make it very personal, me. If I dig a little deeper, I find out it has a lot to do with them and a lot less to do with me. Things have improved, although she and I never mediated. I did work with her, and I kept it as minimalist as possible. I simply spoke to her when I came in, like I do everyone, and that caught her off guard. I'm always so surprised when people are in their feelings at work, and I speak, and they're shocked. It just makes me do it even more because I am a grown woman. In my eyes, I know other people say we're still girls and boys under the system of racism, white supremacy.
But I am definitely far more professional than that. You know what I mean? Than to walk into this space and not speak and have this tension in the air. You will never catch me like that, you know, and trap me. Because to me, that's a chess move where now we're just sitting here stonewalling each other. Girl, bye. Anyway, I followed the code that I had said I was going to follow. And it was a smooth night. As she proved my point, one of the girls flipped out off of something that she had said that they could do. And I said, this is exactly why I run a tight ship. She's messy, just as I said, based off of other things I observed. Messy in how she moves, how she maneuvers in her workspace. None of my business. I was just grateful to be able to pick that up, even though I didn't pick it up at the very first time. I'm deciding I was going to work all the way into the end of May, maybe even early June, before I quit to start school. I've decided I think I'm going to make the 25th my last day and put my 2 weeks in on the 11th. I think that's going to be my final. I don't want this to linger because the passive aggressiveness and the attacks, it's just more than I really wanted. I care to deal with for a couple of dollars. Like, so what? I just won't spend the money or have the extra money. Like, you know, they're doing too much. So I got written up for bringing water enhancer for the girls. They don't drink water. So I got some water enhancer. It's a little squeezy. I know it has artificial sugars, but like they're constipated and they need to drink water. So they drink it when I put the artificial, the water enhancer in it. Anyway, dietary found it, and I guess a big hoopla was made about it. Someone asked me, well, the white woman manager asked me, was it mine? Was I the one that brought it? I said yes, so we admitted it. Again, days later, I get to work, and she waits to the very last minute after all the staff that could vouch for me, because I actually asked a staff to stay because I did not trust how, you know, that she was still there, what she was getting ready to do. She waited even until that staff left to approach me with the incident report or whatever it is, because she didn't even know what to call it, said that another manager wrote it, the manager above her, and asked me to sign it. She said she would take a picture of it. I began to look up because it said they made claims about the water enhancer. So I wanted to be sure. Like, they said it had herbal supplements. I was like, I don't know what herbal supplements you're talking about. It's just going to sign it because there's also a box for me to respond to what was written, and I need time to respond. So it's not that I'm refusing to sign it. I admit it. I'm the one that brought it. You're not telling me what this document is, and I want to look further into it, and I want to be able to have time to write in the box. So she took the form, the unsigned form, and said, I said, well, why are you taking it? And she said, because I'm having a meeting with such and such tomorrow. And I just said, okay. So I took a picture of it, emailed the white man manager and asked them, you know, what is this? You know, I don't understand this. And I didn't sign it, not refusing to sign it. I just am not going to sign anything until I have time to process it. I said, I take time to process anything that requires my signature. I said it just like that in the email. He responded, explained what it was. He said, it's a way to document good and bad things, you know. I said, okay, so is this me being written up? Or, like, is this a corrective action? Because there are things that I've heard other staff deal with, and I want to know, is this what I'm dealing with? And he said, no, it's just a supervisory note, like, to say that we talked about this, and, like, you won't do it again or you'll be monitored. And I said, okay. I haven't seen the document since. Like, it hasn't been brought back to me to sign, so I won't press. But the thing that I wanted to say, the point or the lesson, Mr. Fuller has in his book, it's this like little blurb of what you can write on something that when someone is requesting your signature. I have a picture of it in my phone. So in case I ever have to sign something like for whatever pressure, I will put that there and then I'll sign. But under circumstances at work, you know, I never, not even my eval, am I going to sign. Unless you gave me stellar all five, sure, I'll sign that. But if there's anything in there, I'm not signing it right away. Number one, personally, I take a little bit of time to really truly process your feedback or criticism. two, now that you've put that out there, I need time to also think, like, what's my rebuttal or what is in my defense or what I need to put down. And three, I just actually take time to process things like that, you know, at my job. Even if I'm just learning something, I need time to actually understand, okay, I'm being written up for this. This is what they said I did. It had this in it. This is the policy and procedure. This is how I violated it. Like, it takes time. I am never going to allow anyone to manipulate a situation, whether using time to say, oh, they're trying to rush me, or their position, or they're the manager, to bully me into putting my signature, my name, on any document that I have not thoroughly vetted and ensured that, yes, it's accurate, whatever it is that they're saying, and that I've also made sure that I'm shining my best light on that piece of paper as well. Because the truth is, the policy and procedure says that we're not allowed to bring outside food or drinks. I violated that. That's fine. But there were other things in there that I wanted to make sure. So if you're listening to this live or later, you know, in the future or whatnot, it's okay to say, I'm not signing this right now. You have every right as an employee to take time to process anything, especially criticism or disciplinary action that requires your signature. That goes into your file. And I don't care, even though I'm leaving, yes, in, what, 2-3 weeks, I still want to ensure that the best is put forth. You know what I mean? And the best is documented, and everything is correct. Furthermore, I also speculate that she lied about saying that the white man manager is the one that wrote it. That is why I think she ended up taking the paper back. But I don't have proof of that. But no, you have every right to say you need time to process before you sign something, or even before you open your mouth and speak. I do that too. I need time to think before I have this conversation. With that said, thank you very much for listening to me. And I appreciate your time. Thanks.
Wow. Much obliged, Emmy. Professional. I can't say it enough. Just being professional in a work environment, both professional, if there's some sort of dispute, conflict, whatever it is, you still speak, you know, morning, Helen, afternoon, Theodore, you speak to everybody, you know, and she said even that seemed to catch them up, like, whoa, she spoke to me, like, whoa, I was just, you know, accusing that nigger, and now she's speaking, all that, like, yeah, it's how we do every day, just being professional, speak to everybody. And then with the write-ups as well, just being professional. I guess I will pause. I don't do the water enhancer. She said duly noted it has, you know, whatever it has. But I mean, hey, trying to encourage folks to drink water, especially people who are dehydrated and having some problems, like trying to do what you can to help them. That, I mean, that's not a commendation. And, you know, three cheers for Emmy above and beyond. Okay. Anyway, so with the write-ups, we've had a lot of folks, unfortunately, not surprisingly, but unfortunately over the years, who've called in dealing with write-ups, and they've referenced Mr. Fuller before about, you know, hey, do not be bullied. Do not be bullied into, I got to put my John Hancock down immediately. Like, whoa, I got to review this. You know, I might even need an evening to sit down and review everything. We've had folks who've employed a number of different strategies from not signing because same type of thing. There were things that were inaccurate on the document, so they were not going to sign off on such an inaccurate report. And or people who actually wrote up their own report and stapled that to the document, indicating that they did not agree with what was written and or pointing out inaccurate statements on what was written in the document. And so that got stapled and included with the report. They could have, you know, done whatever with it along. But we've had a number of people who've been put in this kind of circumstance. I think that is fantastic to just even ask questions. Same thing. What is this? Is this a disciplinary write-up? Let me even clarify exactly what I'm being presented with and asked to sign. And just getting more information that way before we even proceed. Like, phenomenal. I think that is super important because they'll do that a lot of times in work situations. They'll be in a position of power and present it as though you're in trouble, you know, this sort of thing. You'll end up out of, you know, out here on your ear, have this sort of thing, and you'll feel pressured as opposed to just being able to take some deep breaths, slow down, and process, because you want to make sure that you're getting accurate information. Is this even, you know, truthful, what's on this report that you're demanding that I sign right now? You know, what is this, in fact, that I'm signing right now? Like, excellent job. Just a lot of times slowing things down. Let's not speed up. Let's not go in a hurry, especially if I got to sign something or if it's even remotely sounding like I'm being accused of something. Oh, yeah, we got to go real slow. Not surprising at all about the almost seems kind of retaliatory, like, who does this Nigra think she is, taking a day off? Like she's not going to train this female, which she told us about last week. Take a day off because she doesn't want to train her. We'll show her. Put that stuff. Got Jim Jones here poisoning children, sprinkling God knows what in the water around here. Anywho, not even have to put a whole lot of mental energy in processing all of that. I think that is also black self-respect and saying, hey, you know what? I was going to try to get a few extra shillings out of all this, but I think the 25th, I'm done. Like, with all the recent events, like, I think that is so just black self-respect. Like, our time and energy is precious. Like, it's always nice to have a few extra nickels in the bank. Absolutely. But, I mean, sometimes just being able to have your sanity back, not having all this unnecessary strife in your life. Even that, like, I can hush right now. Just to have that type of time where you can enjoy some quiet, think, especially if you have big transitions, looking to do constructive things in your life. Sometimes you need a little bit more calm. Dr. Welsing used to talk about that. I'm trying to think. I got big plans here. ISIS Papers sequel. I need to be quiet so I can think, plan. That is very important, as opposed to a lot of nonsense. And I'm being accused of, we got Jim Jones in the workplace. You know, watch your Kool-Aid. She's putting all, God knows what, like, come on, come on, come on. Like, I'm done. Arrivederci. Do whatever you all are going to do here. Whew. Get my doctoring on. Much obliged, Emmy. Oh, look at here, look at here. Let's see, Irie is with us. So, Irie, we had a caller earlier. She was calling in to offer business tips, but she didn't know what field that your business is in. Irie, if you are with us, what field is your business in?
Hello, what's up, everyone? Thank you for the caller calling in. So, I have technically two fields. Both are considered the arts. So one is graphic design and one is music. So with music, I write and I sing, and I'm also trying to get my publishing, you know, together. But either way, it's done under a corporation that I've established, and I have a DBA for that corporation as well. So when I do it, I'm, you know, making sure I protect everything legally, you know, assets acquired, and, you know, making sure I also am in line with the, you know, the business stuff that I have to make sure I'm in line with. But it's graphic design, selling visual art, and also jewelry and music, singing and publishing.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. Let's see. If the young lady who dialed in earlier, I reckon if she's still with us, you offered your tips. Now that you know more details, does that help or do the tips before? Does that kind of cover what you were offering, Irie?
Hello?
Yes, ma'am. We can hear you.
Yes, absolutely.
because the grant information that I provided are for all types of businesses, as long as the person requesting them is, you know, obviously a woman or black woman. So yeah, so Ms. Iris should be fine, and you know, if she should decide to pursue those particular opportunities, she definitely will qualify. Okay, thanks.
Spectacular. Black male privilege. Spectacular. I guess so you can just rewind a little bit, and it would be like around the beginning of the second hour of the program, I suspect, and you'll hear some of the great tidbits, websites where you can go check out where they should have financial resources to help with your business endeavor.
I want to say thank you again, caller, for that. And sorry, Gus. Sorry about the black male privilege. But I tell you what, I've been looking high and low. So if I see anything that a black male would benefit from directly, I'll definitely call in and share that too. But I'm grateful for the information. Thank you very much.
Spectacular. Hope
you're most welcome.
Mm-hmm. Thanks to the caller for dialing in to share. I hope it works out. Hopefully you'll get lots of resources, and yeah, business will be booming afterwards. Anywho, black male privilege. Anywho, the number is 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Speaking of black male privilege, I just want to make sure I get it in before I forget, as we cycle through the broadcast. So I said Chris Rock is going to be the critical race scholar, maybe of all time, but certainly of the 20th and 21st century. So this is black state trooper alleges racism at Greensburg Barracks in federal lawsuit. A black Pennsylvania State Police Trooper said in a federal lawsuit Monday that the department's Greensburg Barracks is rife with racism towards its employees and the public it serves, and that its leaders have done nothing to stop it. Among his experiences, Trooper Tavin Davis said a garden gnome was hung by duct tape like a noose outside his locker. The symbol was used to intimidate, harass, and subject Mr. Davis to the most hostile of environments, the lawsuit said. The report includes claims of discrimination, hostile work environment, and conspiracy, as well as violations of the right to free speech. Let's see, I'm skipping through a little bit of the report. They refused him training and promotion chances. We talk about that all the time. Training, let's see. Okay, here we go. The PA State Police, by and through its policymakers, have no interest in solving the racial problems that persist in the department, the lawsuit said. According to the report, Davis first heard racist comments 5 days after he joined the academy, when a trooper made offensive comments about black NFL players kneeling for the national anthem. The trooper called it the National Felons League. Davis alleges he experienced microaggressions for several months. It got worse when he was promoted to trooper and assigned to Greensburg in the spring of 2018, the lawsuit said. In May of that year, the complaint said Davis's colleagues hung the gnome outside of his locker room door. In another instance, the lawsuit said one of Davis's partners told him there are two types of African Americans, black people and niggers. I am sure he went on to give the rest of Chris Rock's spiel. And in the lawsuit was, what do you mean racism? Chris Rock is a national treasure. Everybody, did you see Bring the Pain? Everybody hates crap. I mean, he is a national treasure. Go all the way back to New Jack City. New Chris Rock. Chris Rock, ladies and gentlemen. Woof. Critical race scholar of our times. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have commentary to share, line should be open. Let's see.
Hello?
Greetings, Rachel in New York, not Thomas in New York.
No, this is Rachel, I guess. Good evening to you and to all. I just wanted to give a quick update about my position from my RD position to my nursing position. So I started my new position on Thursday. On Monday, I returned to my RD position for 3 days. I spoke to my white female boss, and she basically still wanted me to work as an RD, not as an RD, but to train the new RD that's going to take over my position, but did not actually tell me that she was going to compensate me for that time. She just wanted me to overextend my time that I'm training right now as an RN to help her. I basically ignored that because I'm not going to do it. And right now, I'm really glad that I'm starting this new position. And that's it.
Mommy working hard. Mother's Day coming up, so-called. Mother working hard. And even that right there, I'm so glad the little one with a newborn, not that it's any, we have heard from a mom who's dealing with the vaccine issue with her offspring who's about to be 20. So, parenting is hard the whole way through. But a very, very new one to take care of and watch out for, and have white people trying to steal your time and not compensate you, like, could you, help and do this and do this and do that? We talked about that already today. Well, they're just constantly be harassing and seeing if you can do this and do that and do this and overextend yourself. Like, man, even if I didn't have a brand new child breastfeeding and all, like, man, come on. Like, compensate. We don't have other things to do in life. Bravo. No need to even respond. And that sort of thing is so common in the workplace. And a lot of us, John Henryism, Jane Henryism, trying to, hey, I'll show them. I'll work hard and do everything and work overtime and extend myself and blah, 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 and all of that. And we're still just niggers, It's two types of black people. Niggers. And it's all just niggers. It's not two types. It's niggers and niggers. That's it. But bravo in my opinion. I'm glad the new job is working out thus far. Has there been any issues with the lactation facility thus far?
There hasn't. I know where the room is, and it hasn't really been an issue with it because the facility is like low capacity, so I'm pretty much the only person using that room.
Love it, love it, love it. We had a mommy before. She enjoyed a situation like that where it was basically she was the only one who was using the lactation room on her job, and I guess some white people got wind of this. And then, like, right at the year point, where I guess that's where FMLA for a lot of folks legally, they can cut off at a year and say, all right, no more lactation room, get out in the, the shit or whatever, if you want to do all that. And that's what they did, like, change the code on the room and everything. She was the only person using it, but they changed the code. Like, oh, no. Matt, you had your year. That's what it says. Yep, got to go out to your car or behind the recycling shed or whatever it is. But does not get any better than tacky. No regard for black mommies, black parents, period. Certainly not in the workplace, Mother's Day notwithstanding. But yeah, much obliged. Glad. Hopefully that will not be the case for you. I hope you will have the hopefully unused and super hygienic, quiet lactation space and great new job, and will be super well compensated. There you go. Super well compensated for all of your hard work in your new capacity. That is spectacular.
I'm actually going to have my own office, so and it's going to be private, so I can do whatever I need in
the office. Uppity. I love it. I love it. I love it. That's what I'm That's what hopefully all of the non-white people, we can be making those type of improvements and getting massive upgrades to our work situation. Bravo. Like, love it. Love it, love it, love it. Get a spectacular view and everything. Let's see. Do we have any other folks with commentary? They wanted to make sure they got in. Let's see. Make sure I'm not missing.
Yes, sir.
Retired firefighter in Florida. Yes, sir.
Sign nothing, especially things that you do not understand. I don't know of any job where you are obligated to sign something that you don't understand or signing something that's not going to be towards your best interests. So do not sign anything that you are asked but not ordered, especially. In most cases, it's a request to sign something. Do not sign it, especially if you don't understand it and it's not going to be towards your best interests. Also, something else that I heard. And also, do not write anything. You know, they have this thing on jobs where write your side of the story. Do not write anything that is under that particular subject matter. When I was on a job, there was a white woman who was working at the fire station that said that she wasn't comfortable around myself and several other black males. Well, guess what? I am not responsible for a white woman's comfortable environment on the job place. Maybe that's the job's responsibility, or maybe it's hers. And myself and several other black males who were asked to write our quote-unquote side of the story, we did not write anything. There was no violation of any policy and procedure. So you should not write anything at all. By me just listening, I just noticed I'll try to put it in a historical perspective. You know, at a time where we did not work in the corporate environments, or if we did, it was very few of us. The misbehavior that exists amongst non-white people due to our training from the global system of racist white supremacy, you didn't see it that much because it may have been you and some other black person way on the other side of town that worked for that particular job. You didn't have contact with one another, let alone talking about bullying each other, bullying one non-white person, bullying another. So therefore, I said that to say that counter-racist codification, you have to take it to work with you. Do not leave it. Do not leave it outside of that door or that fire station or police station, wherever you work at. You got to have that codification with you. The idea in mind of talking about something other than the job and what it's entitled for, you are at your own risk by doing so. Now, I know people have heard me state of myself breaking every last one of those rules, but it was a situation to whereas there were some people that I worked with on the job, and we were doing things off the job that was designed to the participation in solving the problem of racist white supremacy, at least contributing towards it anyway. And it's a risk, but I wouldn't advise that for anybody to do at all. If I had to, somebody asked me about it, I wouldn't advise it at all. It is you're making a complicated situation even more complicated to do so. So don't do that.
And that's all I have to say today, I think. Thank you for listening.
Much obliged, retired firefighter in Florida. Very important, again, asking questions and determining if it sounds like there's some accusation of wrongdoing, like is there a specific policy that has been violated, some specific aspect of wrongdoing, a code violation, like something. You got to tell me something. If that is not the case, what is the nature of the charge again? Like if there was exactly no policy infraction, like let's get that clear and then we'll determine how we're going to proceed from there. And again, all of this, the main component, gotta keep your composure, like to be able to ask those questions and, you know, I don't think I'm going to sign anything here, or I don't even know what this is to sign. I'm going to need some time to review this before I can even make a determination. Gotta keep your composure. You cannot be, she said, what? That winch said, I'll be, can't do it that way. That is not going to work out. Like, take some breaths, calm down. Black people get accused of things all the time. So really shouldn't be that. If you have not been wrongly accused of something, well, jolly for you, and you've done well to avoid it this long. I guess this is your comeuppance. You can think of it that way, but get it. Just take some deep breaths. Always a great time. You can excuse yourself, go to the restroom, go to your car, get it together, and just process. That's what I mean about not trying to respond immediately. Take some time, then you can process and figure out, oh, okay, yeah, I'm not going to be able to respond this until I've been able to give it a satisfactory review and investigate exactly what's on the document here. Take your time, read or whatever the charge is, but super, super important. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in, if you either have suggestions, comments, we still haven't heard anyone who has talked about, I think retired firefighter just said, hey, you got to take the codification with you to the workplace. Absolutely. I would say, especially if you work with exclusively non-white people, like, oh, yeah, like that is the worst time to think, oh, man. What do they call it? I can let my hair down, whatever that means. I think that's in the word guide and recommended not to use. I can relax. I don't have to be codified. We can just chat away. You are cruising for a bruising, as they say. Like, that is not going to, you can listen to the Cows archives. That is not going to work out well at all. It's about 8 billion different ways that can go wrong. Maybe you'll experience them all. Codify everything, even if you are in a work environment where there are no white people, you still need to be codified. Let's see. Number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Still waiting if we got anybody who has a constructive incident talking about non-work related issues with other black people ended well. Like, you didn't need security to intervene. Like, this ended, you all were just happy as could be, exchanged literature, maybe families became homies, you all did constructive counter-racist projects together, experiments. Let us know.
Hello, Gus?
Irie in Louisiana? Yes, ma'am.
I had to step away and I just caught what you said. I don't know what the other person was saying, but so I'm trying to figure out if this will apply. But I've had a couple when I was substituting and I would meet non-white black people that didn't necessarily know the code, but we were codified. We would kind of even like check in with each other in the morning and say, like, you know, I'd say, I'm teaching so-and-so today. Oh, okay, well, I'm going to be in this person's class. And they would tell me what to look out for and tell me, you know, if those students, you know, they would have them. And just little things like that, like even coordinating our days a little bit, and then being available to help each other if we needed, like, some coverage, like, really quickly, somebody needs to step out or whatever, and, you know, being, you know, not far from each other. Other than that, I mean, I think when I was in the military, I really had a valuable relationship with the sergeant at the time. We were both from the South, so we did our jobs and we did them well, but he really thoroughly trained me on not just the military expectations, but expectations of us being Black and then, you know, in the service and everything, and really put me on very much on learning the Uniform Code of Military Justice thoroughly. And he would also make sure that I didn't get, like, really crappy assignments. He would tell me, you know, they just tried to get you to do X, Y, Z, and I told him, no, because I need you to do blah, blah, blah. You know, and I thanked him for it. And they punished him a few times for that and also for being good at his job. They actually sent him to Iraq during his wife's at-risk pregnancy. She had preeclampsia, and they deployed him. So I do believe he got out not long after I got out, but I really valued that. Nothing too much after that. You know, most of the time it's, you know, gossipy or whatever. So I just, you know, high and by those people. But, yeah, otherwise those people really helped me out a lot. And I wish they'd have been there the last time I substituted this one particular teacher I was working with, because she would have probably gave me the heads up on what the other teacher was trying to do. But she wasn't there that day. And that's all I have to say.
Much obliged, Irie. That is awesome, but that's exactly in line with what I recommend. The situations that you said, the scant times where it seems like it's been something really helpful, the relationships that you had with Black people in the workplace, it was very much focused on your job, like in the school setting, like giving heads up about assignments, or maybe even coordinating your days so that you could offer assistance if need be with some of the students. Like, that is very much work related. And the same thing you said when you were in the military, working with this Black sergeant who helped you avoid some of these, maybe the less attractive, less appealing assignments, and really helped you to learn, understand military code of conduct, all that. I mean, that is super constructively focused on the job, which is, I mean, that is 1000% what I suggest. Like, you didn't, you know, give us any stories, unless I missed them, of you talking to this Black general about, you know, the movie of the month club, or what narcotics you all like to do in your spare time, or all the drinking games that you all engaged in. Like, I didn't hear that. It was just super constructive. Like, this will help you, you know, prosper in your military career. And the same thing with these Black educators. Like, that's the sort of these sound like really constructive professional relationships. That's like, woo, that is spectacular. If people can form those are great. But I mean, that is very different from what you said at the end, where most of the time it's gossiping and nonsense and not constructive. Like, nah. Not that at all. If you can just keep it focused on the job and courteous, two thumbs up. And if you all can work it so that you're trying to be courteous and helpful to one another, well, that's just, you know, extra on top. But that's not an expectation. In my view, like, it's so much confusion and what have you. I would say, generally speaking, it'll be enough just to be professional and courteous. And that's a high bar, in my opinion, for the system of white supremacy, and even the workplace especially. That is a high bar, to be consistently professional and courteous with all of the non-white people, Black people, that you are around. Whew. Black brother, indeed. Let's see. Much obliged, Irie. Other folks, commentary to share. I saw other folks whose hands we have missed totally. Give me a moment to get to the switchboard here. Yes. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open as well. Oops.
Hello.
Yes, ma'am. You?
Hi, this is Golden from Ohio. I have a couple of things to share. I think it's very interesting that you talked about some of the topics. We recently went through acknowledging our employee policy manual and a first round of tests. Each year we get a battery of tests and things that we need to go through. So we just got those. But for most people, they go through the policy manual and they just click on it, sign it. And I had two managers come over and, you know, get on my computer. I was like, oh, whoa. And they're getting ready to click my approval. And I said, whoa, we don't want to do that. I have not read it. So I save a copy. I have a printed copy at home, and then I print a hard copy, set it at my desk in case I need to whip it out real quick and don't want to log in for the electronic copy. So I went through there to see what type of updates were made. So the updates were as of March 23rd this year. And one thing that I wasn't aware of was that my job has a affirmative action policy, which we're able to, it's called a written affirmative action plan, portions of which are made available to employees upon written request. So I'll be requesting that when I get back to work Monday, just to get an idea of what they consider their duties or responsibilities to employees with regards to affirmative action. So that was one thing that was new. I'm always very careful to read the prohibited actions, discrimination, harassment, and the code of business conduct and ethics, because that is what we all are supposed to be held responsible for. So in the event that something occurs that you think is incorrect, a lot of times you can just go right to that, and I just kind of phrase it, I think I may have been the recipient of a prohibited action as dictated in our employee handbook, something along those lines. If you want to go further than that. But so this helps me to gauge my behavior and stay not just codified, but in relation to what could be perceived by another employee. However, I'm sure a lot of people don't dig this deep into this. As I said, they just click on it and, you know, have no idea what they're signing. But I think if your job doesn't have it, then, you know, I would maybe request like HR to get a written policy, or even be part of a group or a committee that petitions and says, you know, we prefer to have a written documentation, and just present that to your HR department, because I think a lot of times it can come in handy as far as referencing things. So with regard to one thing that was new that I pointed out to another victim, I tell a lot of people in that are Black in my area, you know, if you're encountering any issues or things that you think might be a problem, I've always got this at my desk. So come and check this out. And, you know, if you need to ideas about how to bring your incident to escalate it to a management, then, you know, we can look in here and you can use this as your baseline for what you're describing. One thing that I did notice that they added here, which I think is really interesting,
With regard to prohibited action, it was inappropriate physical conduct, including touching, assaulting, impeding, or blocking movement. So, you know, a lot of times when you're in the workplace, people block your way with a chair or do things like this. So these are seen, at least on my job site, as being intimidating actions or actions that are of an aggressive type nature. So like I said, I just think that's something, if you don't have it on your job, then I would maybe, like I said, go and talk to your HR department. With part of our training, there was some interesting stuff that I came across. I spent a lot of time on our something called, it was some kind of discrimination and harassment training again. So it had a lot of videos, a lot of vignettes and all that. And I always pay very close attention to who the offenders are and who are the offended parties. What their name is, what their sex is, the actors. I make very, you know, keenly pay attention to that. Very rarely, if ever, do you see a white person offending someone. It's always different races offending other non-white people. So I always see that as being something that's like with their imagery, it's very, very prevalent. So for some of the examples we had, for Rod, obviously someone of a Middle Eastern background is saying something incorrect to someone Chinese or of an Asian, Philippines, something along those lines. And they're always things like that, but it's never a white person offending any color or any other race, which I find is very interesting. And that none of the training, you won't see any of that. So within this skills workshop, something that stuck out to me reminded me of Mr. Fuller. One of our recommendations was helping those who need it most. And under that, it said, we should aim to ally with those in the greatest need of our help. Although everyone deserves support, some people are especially vulnerable to harassment. So I felt that was really important for me to write down and just make a note of. Another thing with that, we were presented with shared resources and information if we have any encounter any of this, as well as going to management. With regard to the vaccine, I have a couple things to say with that. My job is not requiring it. I work in a financial banking industry. We're not required to have it. However, we have a wellness program, so as similar with the flu shot, if you get it, you get some type of bonus points, which can be redeemed for gift cards and things like that. Now, our governor here was really encouraging a lot of people to take the vaccine, and as they were rolling out more for the younger ages, he was doing setting up mass vaccinations at the colleges and all this stuff. And he was really, you know, getting everybody, you know, giving them access to it. Well, probably about 2 weeks ago, it comes out that most of the major Ohio colleges are not going to mandate vaccines for students or employees. And this comes, they didn't give that information to everyone before. They just opened all these mass clinics and was recommending everyone to get it before you turn to work, before you leave campus. And now it's not really even mandated.
and they say that the colleges and schools say they're not going to do that. And I have a friend who, she works for a government agency. She wound up getting the vaccine. They weren't required, but a lot of the information is they're asking and gauging, like, do you plan to get it? And, you know, what are your concerns? Things of that nature. And just for an informational standpoint, she took the Pfizer, and she was, you know, felt some sickness between both the shots. And recently, about a week ago, she told me that she just out of the blue started getting a pain in her right breast, which is the opposite side. Now, if you Google the vaccine, it does say that you can get some swollen lymph nodes, and it can mimic on the side that you got the shot. Well, this is on her other side. So that's just some information to throw out if anyone, you know, cares to know about something like that. And then let's see, the last thing, with respect to having productive, I guess, interactions, I spoke, as I said, about having the resource with the business code of conduct and things like that. Also, whenever I get resources, I share them with everyone Black, which is what the white people do not do. So even if someone white neglects to share something to me, I'll go to a manager and say, I would like access or the information regarding this, get it from them personally, and then dispense it to everyone. So I think that's all I have to say. Thanks.
Context of white supremacy. Much obliged, Golden. I think Justice, one of her all-time favorite questions, how do white people conceal information from non-white people? She just gave one right there, where the folks will get information on the job and they do not immediately disseminate it to all of the Black people. Somehow the Black people get it way late. Like, after everybody, it'll be stale, like outdated by the time the Black people get it, to say, hey, I get it, and immediately go share with all the Black people. Like, that is, in my view, that is above and beyond Black self-respect, above and beyond the call of duty in trying to help out other Black people in a workplace environment. Let me see, we go all the way back to policy and procedure. My goodness, talk about that all the time. That is amazing. They have updates to policy and procedure, and then they rush around. Oh, yeah, don't worry about something. We got it. Put your sign right. Like, dang, I didn't even get to read it yet. Oh, don't worry about it. We got it. You know what it says. Like, no. Wait a minute. Like, I don't know what it says. Wait a minute. You're taking me too fast. I got to be able to look at this. Like, dang. Ugh. Then you start going through and looking at it and, you know, what they define as a hostile act. She said putting a chair in front of someone to obstruct their path. I said, man, I have never, in a workplace capacity, workplace environment, have never had a coworker put a chair or another piece of office furniture, like using that in some kind of way to like block or impede my movement. Like, are you serious? Like, what in the world? Like, what kind of environment is this? Like, where that even has to be written out, that we got to have rules here. Like, oh yeah, that we have had enough of that. Y'all using the chair. This is not something, a physical barricade. Like, this is a piece of, like, what? In the year, we've had a year of the Rona, and we got to add this to policy and procedure to not use chairs and office furniture as a human barricade. And this is a financial sector. Again, we're not at the Bunny Ranch. We're not at some corner of some sort of summer day camp, I guess, or what have you. Like, what? man, oh man, white culture. And imagine black people. Like, I'm sure that exists, but I mean, I don't know, like in a serious suit and tie type work environment. And where you, come on, come on. Anyway, that is important. Going through policy and procedure and finding out what is prohibited, what's considered a hostile act, so that you can clarify these acts appropriately. If people, hopefully it will never happen, but if people are engaged in this behavior around you, whammo, we can get it right to it, you know. Use the chair as barricade. That's right there, hostile act. That's how it's classified in the manual, page 35. Love it. Invoke it as often as possible. I would say that is amazing, using a chair as a barricade in a world. I was staggered just trying to listen to that. Like, what has anyone used a chair to block your path or other piece of furniture in the workplace? Has that happened to you personally?
That hasn't happened to me personally, but from reading that, I would also interpret that to mean, you know, sometimes if you are walking down a main aisle and someone is standing and talking and they kind of spread themselves out so you can't get past, or, you know, kind of do that. That's what I took that blocking to mean as well, not just furniture, but if someone, you know, tries to physically put themselves in a path to not let you go past. So I've seen that happen before where people, oh, I didn't see you there. It's like, oh, okay, really? Like, I've got my hands full of this box of paper and you don't see me, you know, or, you know, something along those lines. So I have witnessed that before. Someone, you know, just kind of turn their back and, you know, act like they're doing something to impede. Oh, I didn't see you there. You know, I've observed that. So I do think it, for it to be written into the manual, there had to have been, you know, some type of shenanigans with people, you know, doing this to where they had to write it out and, you know, make it a bullet point as an example.
That's the same logic I used. I don't know what other conclusion you can come to other than this must be a problem. It's like widespread enough that we got to include that. Man, that's embarrassing. Like all of, even the addition there, like that people are physically like sitting out and spreading themselves out to blah, like, come on, like a year into the Rona, people are behaving like that. Come on, come on. At a financial institution. Jeez. System of racism, white supremacy. Yes, we all need a update on professionalism in the workplace. And considering that a hostile act, that alone would be, in my view, worthy of reading policy and procedure. Because I don't know if I'd be thinking that that's a hostile act, but apparently that's the way they classify that as a hostile act. So, hey, right on. No problem now. I will classify it and boop, quote that page specifically. She said she had seen people doing that sort of thing. Like, dang, like if anything, that is just another reminder. Like, yes, I'm not working with my homies. These are not my friends. I don't care if we do any tacky birthday celebrations or anything else. These folks are savages and hostile, and I need to be very alert in this environment, paying attention to things that are happening around me, paying attention to updates to policy and procedure. Don't let them run that past me. Read every word. Man, might even learn what types of hostile acts are occurring regularly in your workplace just by reading what they add to the policy and procedure. Like, man, other folks, let's see, much obliged, Golden. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have commentary to share, proceed. Guess folks are taking a moment to get their thoughts together. We did get an update as well from Golden on the COVID situation, where I think she said that at least in her area, it's not going to be required. And it seemed like they might feel like they pulled the okie doke, where they kind of got people all in a tizzy to go out and get their vaccine or what have you. And then, whammo, It's not going to be required in the workplace. I think that's the case in Washington State. I have to double check to see, but I think from the limited bit that I've heard, I haven't seen any right now requirements for workplaces in Washington State saying that they're going to require that you be vaccinated. That's, you know, certainly one where it's going to depend on region, where you are in the world, where you are in the U.S. specifically in terms of what's going to be required. But I have seen that in a number of states so far where they're saying, no, we're not doing that. No requirements for workplace, no requirements for school. Like, we are not. I think even in Florida, I think Governor Ron DeSantis, I think he might have signed that one as well. Like, we're not doing the vaccine passport nonsense. We're not doing all that in these parts. So, yeah, I don't know if that's if people are in areas where they've already said emphatically that they're not doing it, if that's influencing, you know, whether or not people want to be vaccinated or not, or the workplace situation. I would still take it seriously. Would not be licensed for me to run around and high five everybody or want to resume eating lunch in the cafeteria with everybody anytime soon. That would not be me, but VGQ. We'll be here tomorrow for the compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We'll review what has gone down over the past 7 days on the plantation. Same violence, different day, but we'll review that and see if, you know, folks, if so-called Mother's Day, if folks are engaging in that. I've seen some reports where I guess this will be like the first time for some people in like a year that they've physically been able to see their mom in person. So right on. We'll do all that tomorrow, 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific. Did other folks commentary they want to make sure they got in, suggestions?
May I be heard?
Caller in Florida? Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners, and callers. I've had the usual quite a bit of racism, white supremacy culture being practiced in the workplace. There's been this, I think this is a like a scheme to set up a black female where this white woman who, and this white woman has three offspring, it looks like from the images she's shown to the people in the workplace, three offspring with a black person, black male. So, so she has a pattern for the last couple of weeks, more increasingly, of coming to the desk of a black female. And no one, and she wears the headset and everything to take the calls, the operator. And she seems to have developed wanting to speak with the black female. And, you know, they try to speak with low tone of voice, near silence. And this email came out this week about taking 15-minute breaks because we're all required to take a 15-minute break outside of the one-hour lunch break that we are given. And the two of them been going on their breaks together. So I've always had a suspicion that she is obviously in connection with the white female dominated chat clique, and they're on the other side of the department. So I'm thinking everything that the black female tells this person, unfortunately, she seemed to be telling her personal, what they call her personal business. And I think what is occurring is that the white female is making it appear like she's saying things about herself to get the black female to say things about herself. One of those standard tricks. And this email goes out with the white female's name on it. And I've always thought that when it comes to them sending this email, these emails about, depending on what the topic is, they'll put that person's name first. And it was about parking because the parking is bad. So people have to move their vehicles like every 2 hours or they'll get a ticket. So she was coming over there to gossip about that. So there's always some kind of drama that she'll come over there with. And once again, you know, I'm thinking that's being used to get the black female amped up and charged up and everything. And the reason I bring this up is that on the 14th of April, we had this conversation where that same black female victim was very emotional. And as in her own words, she exploded about being mistreated and being talked down to, as they say. And she said that, you know, she's, you know, 42-year-old woman. You know, y'all can't talk to me like that. I'm older than a lot of them up there. Okay? And so this, what appears to be this gossiping is going on. And in my opinion, my view is that they're trying to make it look like this white female is being mistreated by the clique, okay? And I think that is being very deceitful. And she's saying that, oh, well, you know, I don't know what they're talking about. And she's saying that she'll, you know, curse somebody out and put them on blast, trying to use these slang expressions, stereotypical type of expressions that are attributed to black people. And every time she's coming back there, and it's always some kind of destructive, gossip-prone type of comments. And it was when, I guess she was saying something about her tattoo, but that's policy-related. So this thing about this meeting came up again, and I try not to say too much. I mean, I've already spoken out about injustice, you know, and the reaction I get is always different than when the other two victims speak. Okay. So they brought up speaking about having this meeting again, but it hasn't happened yet. So I'm not surprised it hasn't happened. And it's almost a month later because the supervisor is a white woman, and I don't think she wants to have the other white women put in a situation to where they're going to be, you know, scrutinized or have their racism exposed or their ability or their tendency to mistreat black people. So it's like I said last week, I was going to just take notes. That's been an issue, one of the issues that's been going on. And she ended the meeting that we had with saying they just need to make sure that they don't continue to keep poking this bear, right? So I've been mentioning about the analogies and everything. So, you know, I'm not trying to force anything or whatever, but I just point them out. But that was one of the metaphors that she used. I have just a few more. There was a white woman that walked through the area, and a non-white female called her a different name that wasn't her correct name. And she said, the white person was saying, oh my goodness, please don't call me that. Don't ever call me that. And then she stopped by where I was at, and she said, she called me Stacy. That's the most whitest girl name ever. So, you know, I didn't respond to it because she wasn't talking to me, but I have no idea what that meant. So the next one was, there's this black male that they've been having an issue with. Who I guess they consider to be homeless, And it was a real big situation where they wanted me to sit with this person. And I said I wasn't comfortable doing that because I think it was some kind of a setup. Because I don't know how they've been speaking to this person, but they've made the situation very volatile. And I said I wasn't comfortable doing it. And it's like they are always trying to get a black person to assist particular black people that they like to call sovereign citizen or, you know, different kinds of terms that they'll usually get the attorneys and chief deputies to come speak with. But as I've been sharing recently, they like to try and align black people with certain other black customers that they don't want to help assist. So I said, you know, I didn't get a comfortable feeling about that or whatever. So I was asked to come into a meeting about doing that next day with the supervisor and the assistant manager, which is a black female. I made sure I addressed that white person. I didn't direct any comments to the victim. Okay. I looked at the white person and she was saying, well, I just wanted to hear, just like a retired firefighter just said, that statement of your side of the story. That's what the white woman said. So she worded it that I went over her head or their head to go to another person, which was a black male who's the court director, who wanted me to be the coverage for him, another black person, to help a black person. So they only want black people to help this guy. So I said that as a black male, I don't think I would be perceived correctly, and especially with law enforcement armed with firearms and guns, I just don't think that's the proper arrangement for me. You know, can there be somebody else to do this? So the victim said that he'll just find someone else, and he found his white guy to do it. Okay, so I said that I didn't go over your head to the black person. He summoned me into the office where he is seated and asked me about that. I said I wasn't comfortable. I said I am not comfortable with that. All right. And so she was saying, oh, okay, well, I just wanted to get an understanding. And it was a big conversation about different things. And I said, this guy, I had heard was saying the word nigga and everything like that. And I don't want any situation to come about with that term being used. So she looked to the other victim and said, oh, do you have anything to say? And she just shook her head. She didn't say anything. So we kept talking, and I said, I just wanted to make a correction. You said that I went over there to him, the guy, she said his name, and I said I did not go over there to him. I said I was summoned. He called me to speak to me, so I did not go over to him and ignore you. I was doing my job, so I didn't have the opportunity to come and address this situation with you. Okay, so then they wanted to end the meeting because, you know, I guess I hadn't explained myself enough. But then I said I wanted to speak to the clerk and everything. But other than that, I just wanted to end on another metaphor that was used. There was a non-white person that's not black. At the end of the day, she said, make sure you don't wear red tomorrow because that's going to agitate the bull. So I was telling them that in that room. And I said, that has been a term that has been associated with black males, a bull, okay, which is a mammal that tends to be, you know, have dark fur a lot of the time, like a cow, cattle, okay. So it wasn't like I was trying to educate her. I was just wanting to let that be known that that was something that I had just experienced. So yeah, that situation occurred, or those situations occurred this week, and I wanted to share that. And thanks for allowing me to speak.
It's crazy. Like, I had to look to see, like, is the running of the Bulls, is that happening soon? Like, did I miss something? Like, Welsing moment for sure, but I mean, I would have just been stunned. Like, I would have had to look at her literally, like, is there a bull around? Did I miss? We went to Florida. We saw some of the cows, and some of them had horns. I wouldn't think that they would have had bulls in Florida, but apparently they do. And like, man, is there a parade tomorrow? Do you know? Are we in danger? Like, I need to know red tomorrow. The bull will tramp. Like, what are you even talking about? Like, what is going on? Like, I'm just stunned. Like, all the way through, the metaphor certainly, but man, I guess don't wear red. There may be bulls and they will come get us sometime tomorrow. Although they do castrate those bulls if they get unruly. Let's see, we had a list before we even got to the bull. They said, so we get the non or the white woman who has had offspring with a non-white person, black male it seems, and she wants to come and kick it and talk with the non-white people and get them to lower their trust, it seems. She'll share a little bit, talk about, we said that a few times already on this program, about not getting all involved in the personal affairs of people at work, that, you know, having someone who they just want to come and share and talk to you about all their trials and tribulations and all their children's names and their relatives and what they did in high school. And man, come on. We work at the paper mill. Like, I don't need to know all that. Like, and that does not mean, since you divulged that information, that I got to turn around and now tell you all of those things. We talked about before, like, having parameters. These are things that I'm comfortable sharing in the workplace with a white person or a non-white person. These are things that are off limits. And I don't care what they come up. And in fact, if they come up saying a lot of things that are odd like that, like I'm their therapist, or I'm in their family, like, might even be a time to stop them. Like, I don't really think these are appropriate subjects for the workplace. We're colleagues, not friends. Colleagues, not family. Colleagues, something other than what you think. This is not appropriate subject matter for a work colleague. Let's see. And we've had a few folks with that where they try and get you to lower your guard. They come in and divulge a lot of private stuff. And then the next one, he says the white person, they come by to talk to black people. Same type of thing. It's always something gossipy. Did you see how tacky they are? And they changed the parking situation. It's management tack. They're just the worst, aren't they? What do you think about old Ned? He knows we got to go out there every 2 hours and change and get you to say something. And then it'll be you that will get in trouble. We heard you over here that you don't like the way Ned has been managing the facility. Like, what? I didn't. Do not engage in any of that. Even it's non-white people. Sometimes, unfortunately, they will do the same thing. Get a reputation. I'm about serious things, work things. I don't do any of that. Just random gossip and talking about people here and complaining about stuff here. Get a reputation. And nope. I'm never engaged in that. And then they come at the same type of thing. They come back. I guess the female that called the white woman Stacy, and says, oh my God, I'm not Stacy. Can you believe that? She called me Stacy. That's the whitest name ever. I don't know why you're telling me that, but that's another great time for a question. Like, what? What do you mean the whitest name? What does that mean exactly? Maybe let me get my pen so I can write this down. Incidentally, that might be another one. I don't think you can be ignorant about racism, white supremacy, and then say that Stacy is the whitest name ever.
Hmm.
What does that even mean, to have white names? Anywho, even those type of little comments, like, why are you coming in? Unless this person like kicks it, we hang out, we have lunch, we chat it up all the time. We're planning like our 4th of July celebration right now. Like, why are you coming to share your outrage about this incident with me that you were called Stacy and that Stacy incidentally is the whitest name? Are you a white person? Like, I mean, it's just all kinds of just like, wow, like this is really zany. I'm just going to write this in my workplace journal and give you a firm look. Stay alert while you're around. At minimum, you're not ignorant about racism. Speaking of not ignorant about racism and watching the metaphors now, they do all this. Got this fella known for talking about justice. We put him off. Supposed to have meetings. We put him off. Even the non-white people don't like being associated with him. They say, whoa. You know, we're going to get to the bottom of it. We just don't want to poke the bear. Like, what? We got wildlife here. We got bulls and bears and rhinos. Like, what's going on? What do you mean poke the bear? Say that tomorrow on the compensatory call-in. Like, especially if it seemed like it might be in some way involving me or anything of that. Like, poke the bear? What? What do you mean? Doesn't get any better than tacky in the workplace. Like, you really have to be mindful, just, you know, what's being said a lot of times, especially if they're trying to be indirect about things. Then you got a lot of the gossiping and unjust networking where they've been chatting and plotting behind closed doors and on their phone and all the rest of it. And then you see this when you have the situation. And I think we just talked about this last week, even though it wasn't with a customer, the white people at the courthouse consistently redirecting black people. You should talk to Jamal. We got this black. You see, we just talked about that. Redirecting them to the black people. And I said, well, wait a minute. These black people sometimes aren't in charge. Why do we have to go talk to the black person when sometimes it's a white person that could solve all this? Now, they do the same thing. They got this black customer who's unruly and apparently says nigger and all the rest of it. Yeah, we should get the black fella. You should go in. Like, whoa, why is that? Why am I the person that, oh yeah, he will be calm for you. He'll behave and none of that. Why is that? And then you got nicknames for him, this sovereign fella or whatever it is. Like, oh yeah, we got our protocol. We'll just let the niggers deal with it. Like, come on. And then they get an attitude about that and say, hey, wait a minute. He usurped our authority here, went over our heads so that he wouldn't have to deal with the nigger. Like, whoa. Time out. We talked about that, too, with the false allegations. Like, I was summoned. I did not have some conspiracy with my fellow Negro colleague to get me out of this work. I was summoned and asked about this and just gave a response. I didn't even have time to cook up some conspiracy and, yeah, I'm going to go over her head and do that. What are you even talking about? And why do I have to be assigned to talk to the black person? Like, what's up with that? Who came up with that code? Like, what? Why am I the best qualified person to deal with the sovereign person? Sovereign black person, whatever that means. Like, come on. And as he said, they got security here, this arm, they already threatened to shank me. Like, come on. I guess all kinds of ways that this could go wrong. Like, I'm cool. You got other folks that can, you know, navigate us safely through this whole ordeal without me having to deal with this fella.
And Gus. And I said that, you know, I don't know if this might have been the most codified thing, but I said, I've addressed that I'm seen in this same manner in regards to the shanking. Hey, I saw you. That's why I had this shank, because I saw you coming, right? You know, I talked about that, and I could have a cell phone in my hand, and they said, hey, you know, can you hold up your hand and show me what you have right there in your palm, buddy? Things like that, you know, and after I got through explaining that, and then I was asking questions, they was ready to leave, man. They was ready to leave. They was ready to get out of there. Said, do you have anything? Ask the black female. This is the manager. The supervisor asked the assistant manager, do you have anything to say about this? She just shook her head, didn't say nothing. And then, you know, well, you know, thanks for explaining this to me. And we'll see you later. They didn't want to talk anymore, you know.
What about an apology? Like, wait a minute. What do you mean the meeting is over? What about, my bad, we didn't mean to accuse you of conspiring with this other Negro to usurp our, my fault. We got some peanut M&Ms for you, and yeah, we'll get out and do nothing. Just, we don't want to poke the bear anymore today. Let's wrap this here thing up so we can get back to it. Like, doesn't get any better than tacky and fake accusations, like, all day long. That's another one. Same thing I said with retired firefighter. Like, you really have to have your composure, because that'd be another one. Like, you know, if they catch you on a day where you're not as patient, if you're tired maybe, and all the rest of something else, got, you had to run out and move your car every other 2 hours so you don't get a ticket, and they come in like, hey, you have went over her head, went and talked to that other black person, so you don't have to get out of assignments here. That's just not how we do business. Like, what? Who are you talking to? Falsely tip. Whoa, let me calm down. Take a few breaths. Take a sip of my water. Get my gallon half jug here. Okay, what am I being accused of again? Like, okay, I went, you're saying, well, see that right there. I did not, we're starting off wrong right there. Like, he called me. That's, you know. Oh, the meeting is over? The meeting is, we're leaving? Okay. Go back outside and move my car. Get back to work. And I don't know if it's incorrect. I mean, I always go, if it's true, I would generally say it can't be too much wrong with stating something that is true. Now, if I was threatened with being shanked here in the courthouse by a fellow coworker, then what can I say? I was threatened with being shanked by a fellow coworker. That did happen. So, you know, that does impact how I function here. Like, I don't know. You see two black people here, like, woof, we have got a major problem. It is a riot. I don't know if it's a protest. Black Lives Matter. We got that. That might be a gang. What did Ron DeSantis say? We got a gang right here at the courthouse. We got to deal with it promptly. Like, hey, it's just way too much for me to even begin comprehending. Like, I'm cool. We'll have to get somebody else. They know how to deal with unruly customers. He talked about that before. They can get an action plan on how to deal with this fella that does not include find a black person to help this guy. Ridiculous all the way at the Florida courthouse. Like, man. And the metaphors does not get tomorrow. They had a whole report about that, talking about tacky metaphors and racism. This week, I'll read a little snippet of it tomorrow, but does not get any better than tacky metaphors, especially in the workplace. Really be mindful of the words that people use around you while you're in a workplace office setting. Lots of exam, even policy and procedure, like, phew, words are critical. All of that said, we did our 3 hours. Be here tomorrow for the compensatory call-in. Hope it has been a constructive use of folks' Friday evening. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. We will need a fully functioning brain computer to neutralize permanently the problem. In addition to being sober, let's be buckled every time we're in a vehicle. I still say, hey, it is, you know, Burger King worker started the program off with that, threatened, called all kinds of racist insults, hit him with a Whopper. Like, it's been that all year long. My view, if you're going to go out, be very, very alert about what's happening. You should be thinking, this white woman, Judith Black, she gets riled up. She could be armed. It's lots of new gun owners, white and non-white, people that are cutting up like that in public and being hostile and rowdy. You should be thinking, oh, yeah, they might have a firearm. In fact, they might have a whole cadre of whites with them who are armed, ready to kill. If you did not leave your residence prepared to die and or kill exit. You are looking for distance. Get away from these folks. Not looking to get in here and rev it up, escalate some sort of verbal confrontation. If you're going out, again, you're sober, you're buckled. If you are driving, you are not on the cell phone. We need all of our attention. And then we're trying to do the minimal things we can to minimize contact with the Mark Furmans of the known universe. All of that said, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. No name calling. Talked about that a lot today, even. No gossiping, no name calling. These are like really small things that have a big impact that we can all do, like greatly advance our progress towards solving this problem, since we are all attempted counter-racists, supposed to be about minimizing conflict with other non-white people. No name calling. Whew. Especially when it has to get to the point where you got to call security on another black coworker. Woo. No name calling, no gossiping. Keep it about the workplace. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Man, I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.